This podcast is brought to you by Harry's. Please visit harrys.com and use promo code BALDMOVE, all caps, to get $5 off your first order. Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we are talking today about Season 6, Episode 3, entitled Thank You. What do you think about this one, Aaron?
No thank you.
Just no thank you.
Do we have feedback this week?
We do. We have a lot of feedback. But, you want to just skip the whole recap thing altogether? I don't want to talk about this episode. No, so it's... I don't know. I got a second watching this morning.
It's the rare episode where I got more and more angry and annoyed the more I watched it. Usually, it's initial disappointment, then some bargaining, some despair, then some acceptance, and then it's like, okay, well, I can start to see. But the problems get getting bigger and bigger in my mind as I watched the episode. And then I actually did the unthinkable. I watched The Talking Dead and read some interviews that Gimple have been sprinkling here and there, and it's just like, Jesus, man.
Yeah, the Glenn thing.
If you're going to do this horse shit, you got to commit to it. You can't. I think it's a terrible decision.
What do you mean by this horse shit?
Glenn death. Glenn's quote unquote.
If you're going
death.
To kill Glenn, you have to commit to it. Is what you're saying, right?
Or if you're going to do a fake out, you have to commit to it. You can't be like. Gimple literally released
a statement
yesterday. I don't think it is either.
I don't think a fake out is ever good.
I don't think it is either. Okay. However, he released a statement saying, I just want to assure Glenn fans that we will see from him in some form or some part of him or in a flashback or in a present scene or sometime in the space-time continuum, we will glimpse him on the glass of our cameras within the next 5 episodes. I'm like, just fuck off. Yeah. Just fuck off.
Yeah.
That is... You know, Michigan J. Frog could have like, hello, my baby, hello, across the screen, and I'd have found it less offensive than the way they've handled Glenn's quote-unquote death.
Uh-huh.
And also, it's like, I want to say, like, I thought about it this morning in the shower. It's like, I kind of want to call everyone that actually believes that Glenn is dead a rube, except for it's easy to forgive a person for believing that for him being buried under a fuck ton of zombies. So... if what I think is true, that he's alive, they're going to have some way to get him out of this preposterous situation, which I don't think they're going. It's going to be worth it or as cool as or believable.
I'm with you. And this is why, for me, the bait and switch, as I would call it.
Yes.
Never, ever, ever works, because it would be much more satisfying for me to for them to end Glenn's part of the episode with Dickless and him on the dumpster. We just don't see him again for the rest of the episode.
Sure.
There's no hint that he's actually dead. There's no, like, because here it's, they're all but saying he's fucking dead. He's dead on screen.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of ambiguities around it. Whereas, like.
Again, The Talking Dead did not put him in memorandum. And every single, or whatever, immemorial. And every time they've done that, it's always been some kind of fake out or there's been more to the story.
But I was thinking about, like, my favorite shows and when I've seen this before, and I'm having a really hard time coming up with anything that I thought was good that was a pure fake out.
Huh.
That was just like, we've shown you something that clearly means one thing, and then later on we're gonna say, nope, this actually means the character's not dead, and here's how.
But I can already that was see satisfying. The smug expressions on their face, like, well, you know, Dickless landed on top of Glenn, and the guts coming out of Glenn were entirely the wrong section of his thorax, but
that's not the hope. So there's a difference between a hopeless situation and a scenario in which you believe that he is firmly dead.
Sure.
Like, if they had showed us just him on the dumpster,
and
cut away, and we were left to wonder, how is he going to get out of this? Is he going to get out of this? Like, it seems totally hopeless, but he's not potentially actively being eaten.
Yeah. And I know that there's like this becoming a bit of a thing on Game of Thrones. It's people like, if you don't actually see a man's head come off or a crossbow bolt go through their forehead or, you know, a heart stabbing their knife, then you assume they're not going to be dead.
Well,
and there's this, and I feel like that there are
things that the producers and directors and stuff have said counter to that too.
Well, but what I'm saying is that I feel like that you can do fake outs like this. They're never entirely what you would call a very skillful play. It's always a kind of a cheap heat kind of appeal to the audience, it seems like. But there's only a finite amount of times you can do it. And I feel like that Walking Dead's gone over that count many times. In fact, they even had a fake out death with Glenn like two seasons ago, where he was supposed to be on the bus and he wasn't on the bus, and it turns out he never left the prison, and he's kind of suspended over this giant sea of walkers precariously on this broken piece of rock in the prison. And to now, at this point, I'm going to be watching, and every time a person is in danger, it's not going to even raise my pulse. Or if they're in an apparently hopeless situation, it's turned into the old Batman series, where no matter what situation, we're left with Batman and Robin at the end. I know if I tune in the same bat time, same bat channel, that they're going to come back next week. And that's...
Yeah.
I don't understand why a storyteller would want to do that to their audience, which would essentially break trust with their audience.
Yeah, so I don't want to spend a ton of time right now talking about it, because we are going to talk about it in the feedback, and we're going to talk about all the reasons why he may or may not be dead, because I got probably 100 emails on that stuff, and I cut most of them because they were reiterating points that had already been brought up, so don't feel bad if I cut your email. I got a shit load of it this time.
Brutal. It's like the zombie horde itself. You just have to kind of get a motorcycle in front and run as many of them as you can 20 miles outside of town.
And even then, half of the herd's going
to
break off.
You have to circle back and make brutal cuts on the rest. It's the only answer for it. The other thing is, before we move on, is, and why I hate this episode, is not only that, but you also have all the baseline things that annoy me about The Walking Dead. The trite reiterations of what the world should be versus what the world is, the ambiguities in time and space, the lazy location scouting / framing of scenes to make the undercut the stories that you're trying to tell. It was all on display in this episode.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe they fucked up this episode. Because we were even saying, like, there's no way. How can you mess up an episode where it's like Rick and then they're running for their lives and they're trying to kill this herd and there's going to be a siege of Alexandria?
Well, when I said that, I thought, oh, we're going to get the herd attacking Alexandria.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's impossible to mess up. All you got to do is a sea of walkers and you're good. But no.
So shall we begin the autopsy?
Sure.
All right. Let's open this fucker up. We begin with the horn. That I hope we never hear again, because at this point it's just I feel like it's my alarm clock in the morning. That's the most hated sound in my life. That particular tone, I've had this alarm clock forever. I associate it with bad things, like a trip to the dentist or whatnot.
I don't know how we would see it. Like, is there going to be like an Enid flashback
if she's
a wolf, where we're going to see like her moving around the town as a wolf,
like? It's funny because I was trying to think how they could make this even more egregious. And I'm like, keeping us in suspense, quote unquote suspense, about Glenn. I have good reason to believe that we're not going to get this resolved next episode.
Yeah.
But what if we have a cascading series of flashbacks, or we have like a governor's arc with Morgan? Because three episodes from now, we still haven't flashback to the current day, present day Alexandria. Like, this could really...
We could be in for a season where halfway through the season or episode 8, finally going to get to the walkers attacking.
Maybe Gimple secretly hates the show, and he's just seeing what I can do to engineer the biggest shark jump in history. And he keeps trying, and we keep getting more people watching. Through the heroic efforts of the people cutting trailers at AMC, he's like, God damn, you keep bringing in these millions of people. Take this. So anyway, the Alexandrians are freaking out. We got Rick trying to lead these groups back, and Rick's group is trying to just herd these people in the running. Daryl and Rick have a debate about, you know, whether Daryl should circle back, go back with them, or whether they should continue leading. And this is all over CB, because Daryl's, of course, on his motorcycle, or they should keep leading away. Nicholas begins an episode-long disassociation.
Yeah.
Like, he just starts losing breaks with time and space. much like the episode. There's this Private Hudson character who just keeps on essentially saying, game over, man, game over. Just bug it out and call it even, man. To which Michonne keeps saying, shut up and move. He probably doesn't have long.
Wait, is this the Sturgis guy?
No.
Is that what they call
him?
He's
the other annoying Alexandrian. No, okay. No, the other one. No, no, the other. He's the guy in the blue shirt, okay? So Rick, his plan is to go backtrack to the RV that was shoring up the weak point of the 90-degree turn to zombies.
Yeah,
had
they don't
to make.
Need that part of the track anymore.
Nope. And he's going to come back around to his side road and meet this herd that's going towards Alexandria, even though they seem like they're heading through a forest, but again, whatever. He's going to pick them up and lead them back Pied Piper style to the rest of the walkers.
Yeah. Seems reasonable.
It seems like a reasonable plan for something that's coming up.
Yeah. Head them off and do the same thing you were going to do before.
But then he gets in some hot water because he privately gives some instructions to Glenn and Michonne. He says, look.
People, not so privately.
Yeah. These people are idiots. They're so stupid that I'm going to say this plan in front of Heath, who's like 10 feet away.
He's hiding behind a tree. He's cleverly hidden.
Well, you know, zombies can do it.
Yeah.
But really, these guys are all, we're all soft in the head and weak as hell. And
afterward, Rick looked over and he saw just these dreadlocks, this dreadlocked ponytail coming out from behind the tree. He's like, damn it. Damn it, I gave it away.
No, he just assumed it's the North American dreadlockus vinus plant. some kind of camouflage.
Yeah, being from the UK, he didn't really know.
Sure. He's never been to backwoods Georgia before. but he just tells him, look, cut and run. If these people stumble, stub their toe, get shot in the leg, break their ankle, just leave them.
And all of the above happens.
Yes, and more. So Heath isn't sure about any of this, but just then Private Hudson gets himself eaten. And it's just stupid. How?
I have no idea.
I haven't seen something this stupid. Well, that's not true. What's-his-face lost a fight to lawn furniture.
Noah, yeah.
On a front porch. But going back to season two, Andrea, where they're all walking like abreast in a search line for Sophia.
Oh, yeah.
And she suddenly just wanders off. Slips, and falls into a zombie somehow within a single cut of the editor. And he was surrounded by his crew. They're not that far off. I mean, Rick and Glenn went like 15 feet away to have this private conversation. He gets jumped by a zombie and he's on the floor fucking humping this thing. I don't see how this could possibly have happened.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I can't
defend it.
But the blue shirt gets eaten and the horn finally stops. And I'm thankful for that. And the Alexanders continue to be whining fatalistic, like, oh, I can't believe you just want us to run. This is just all hopeless. We should just lay down and die. But if we do, you should stay and fight and protect us because, you know, that's what our policy is.
Yeah, they don't seem to want to do anything in this situation. Like, no. You got to get back. That's where you're headed.
You'd think, like, Michonne and Glenn's presence on the team would be a firebreak to that kind of behavior. It's like, do you know who you're talking to? We're the crazy folks that ruin your parties because we've been outside dealing with this shit all day. It'd be like, you know, hearing Nelson Mandela talk about his life in prison and injustice and be like, yeah, well, one time I had to sleep off. I had to go to the drunk tank overnight and sleep off because a fucking cop was hassling me. Uh-huh. It's like, really? That's what you're going to say to fucking Michonne? And to be fair, she does not have much patience for this kind of shit.
Yeah, she tolerates it right now, but eventually she goes off on Heath.
Yeah, which I felt gratifying as a viewer, but I kind of, I don't know, it doesn't seem like realistic human behavior.
What do you mean? To be so...
To like, be this, like, so if your thesis is these people don't want to save me because they're weak and they're going to cut and run at the first sign, your take is to be a passive-aggressive asshole to them?
Okay. Yeah, these people are clearly unequipped to deal with any of this shit. Like, I keep telling myself this is the first time they've been out.
That was clear to me about 10 episodes ago.
I know, I know. But this is the first time they've really been outside of the walls, right? So we've got to see a little bit of floundering. Otherwise, what was the point of all this talk about them not being good enough to go outside the walls and survive?
Well, okay, the floundering's fine. It's the complaining. Like, I just thought that
Heath's, I get it, you don't want to hear whining, but like, sure.
But also, Heath is like, what is his alternative? You don't leave anyone ever? I mean, ask Dickless about that strategy. That's what him and Aiden were doing forever. And I don't know. It bugged me. It's a dumb argument. that's not particularly artfully done, and yeah. it's something that we've been dealing with for the past season, and...
I'm with you. Like, something along those lines needed to happen, but I'm not sure that it worked for me.
So, they encounter a smallish group of zombies, maybe about a dozen, so they're not even really outnumbered at this point. And Glenn says, hey, don't use your guns, hand to hand, take them one at a time, we'll be fine.
And they start kicking ass.
They start kicking ass, even the Alexandrians, until mm-hmm. stupid dude in a bucket hat starts blasting.
Even besides, things, I'm behind everyone, I'm going to start shooting.
Things were well in hand, there wasn't yeah. even a reason to panic. He just pulled his gun out and just started... like Eugene levels of comedy shooting.
Yeah.
Hits one of his own dudes in the dick. He goes down screaming and miraculously didn't get bit by a zombie. And then Bucket Hat just takes off. Yeah. Takes off in the opposite direction.
Sturgis.
Away from...
That's Sturgis, right?
Yes. Named okay. after the motorcycle rally that he was undoubtedly illegitimately conceived at.
Yeah, and, this guy, man.
And miraculously, no one gets bitten until out of nowhere again... A zombie teleports and bites not Tobin. I don't know what the fuck his name is, but I thought he was
Somebody
Tobin.
Somebody said like David or something. I don't
Could
know.
Could be David. It's not Tobin to me. I'm going to refer to him as such. This. I don't care if you do look it up. He's still not Tobin. But at least he's not a baby about it. He actually takes a bite like the...
And he's like, I know what this means. And
if so, I were not Tobin, I'd be like, what the fuck? That guy came from nowhere. This is bullshit. Like this
what,
zombie
what
mosquitoes.
What are these writers doing to me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that they don't just immediately kill him, right? He can be useful.
Yeah, no.
Even
and
though
I liked...
he's dying and he's committed to a certain death here, he can still help them.
And he didn't just curl into a ball and scream hysterically.
Which is all the more sad because he could have actually helped them. Like, he seems to be one of the Alexandrians with his head
sure.
most securely fastened to his body here.
Well, it
him
goes with the Rosita
Heath
theory
and,
that he has something Scott. He has something worth living for.
And that's the fucking thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. so David or not
Tobin.
Not Tobin, whatever his name is. He could have actually helped them throughout this whole scenario. He gets bit.
Heath could have if he hadn't
been
a baby man the whole
episode. Scott could have helped him. He gets shot in the fucking leg.
Sure.
By yeah. the stupidest of the Alexandrians.
I thought Broken Ankle Woman actually showed some steely reserve. That steel's not in her ankles, but
no,
she's
no.
game.
Nowhere
you know, she's game for a scrap.
But that's the thing. Like, consistently, the weakest and stupidest among them would take out what I consider the strongest among the Alexandrians.
Sure. Sure.
And that is a real shame, and it's probably a theme of this episode. I mean, it certainly is with Nicholas.
That's something you do in Scary Movie for a laugh. It's not something yeah. you would do in a show that 15 million people are watching on a nightly basis, hoping for entertainment.
You might not. They did.
So Daryl has faith in Abraham and Sasha. They're like, don't leave, because we don't have that many backups in this kind of crazy plan. And Daryl's like, yeah, but Alexandria... And he takes off. Now, at this point, they're 5 miles away from the quarry.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things that, before we get too far into this Daryl stuff, because I know we're going to talk about it, a couple of things that are also weird, like when they're talking about, I think there's a line where he's like, we're moving in the same direction as the herd. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we're going to catch up to something. And Michonne's just like, yeah, we'll deal with that when we get there. But like... What is scarier than the herd? What are you worried about running into going forward? Going forward from your location to Alexandria, you know there's nothing there,
no,
right?
I defy a person to draw a map of this scenario and explain where everybody
yeah,
is
yeah.
and where, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't. You're right. What could you possibly run into that's more dangerous than 10,000 walkers?
Yeah. It's silly. Like, that whole line didn't make sense to me. And then, like... I don't know. Like, the herd that they do run into, the partial...
The only thing I can think
like
of is
four or
Michonne,
five zombies later.
I think it's shitty writing, but the only thing I can think of that would save it is Michonne has put two and two together and realized, you know, truck horn ramming some vehicle, maybe ram the wall. The gunfire hasn't gone off, I don't think, yet. But, like, perhaps Alexandria's under attack. So the only thing more dangerous than a mob of zombies could be living humans taking pot shots at you as you're running from out of cover. But
yes, but that's where they're headed.
I know.
They know that's where they're
yes,
going
yes.
to end up.
Sure.
So like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it solves it, but I'm saying that maybe that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Coming from Heath, I was disappointed.
Michonne and Glenn's group is in bad shape. They have a bite victim and two limpers. Not Tobin gives his backstory that resonates with Michonne. So there's something that might be an elegant piece of storytelling here. Michonne reacts to this because this is essentially her story.
Yeah.
But as a Rick and Michonne shipper, I also want to point out that this not Tobin guy falls for this girl who sees her sees him as a human for the first time. It's pretty easy to see to draw the parallels that not Tobin is to this woman as Michonne is to Rick.
Okay.
Like Rick's the first person, Rick and Carl, the ones that kind of like brought her out of this feral state that she found herself into after being post-traumatic stress from the whole zombie deal and seeing your friends and your lover and your child die.
Sure. Throws fuel on the fire for shipping him.
Yeah. Which probably has bad things to say about Jesse's survivability, but you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I'd take one Michonne over a million Jessies.
Yeah. Easily.
So anyway, and I think that's also why, because she's got this kind of landed fish on a deck expression, like she's sucking wind this whole time. Like, and I feel like that if it's just, oh my God, this guy's just like me, there's another realization she's having there. And I think it might be that she has feeling. I don't know. I'm not such a 16-year-old girl as I'm saying this. Dear diary, today so I saw Michonne fall in love.
It doesn't seem like they've addressed that in seasons, right? Like the last time maybe I can think of them addressing it is when she started to get real close to Carl when they went to go get the crib for Judith. And like,
it seems like
there was a lot of acknowledgement there of
Rick
like
coming
thank
to
you
town
for,
and being simpatico with Jesse has put this all in the back burner.
Yeah. And they totally haven't addressed that. So
maybe I'm reaching.
I think maybe you are reaching, but eventually I kind of see that story playing out that way.
I just can't explain what the expression on her face was, except for her realizing that she wants to get back to, at the very least, her people, if not Rick specifically. I don't know. Again, I don't apologize for being a Riccone shipper.
Okay.
So Glenn decides that they need to find a place in this town that we've never heard of to hole and patch up the wounded. And this is going to prove to be a fateful, if not fatal, decision, Jim.
Yeah.
But Glenn and Michonne both agree, like, you know, whatever Rick said, that's what Rick said. He don't know the facts on the ground. We're fine. We'll be all right. There's this conversation between Heath and Nicholas where they reveal that this is the place that Aiden and him fucked their buddies over.
Yeah.
That's all last season business. But that means he's going to be the one that has to take point because he's familiar with the town. Mm-hmm. I think showing up to some place, shitting your pants and running doesn't necessarily make you super familiar with the town, but that actually kind of pays off later in episodes, so whatever.
Yeah, and I think maybe there was potentially a little bit of prep, because we know like Aaron was a scout, right? So Aaron would probably run around and say, hey, there's this town.
Yeah.
We need to plan a mission out there. He comes back with kind of a map, and then Nicholas like heads up that mission.
Mm-hmm.
So he would probably be familiar with the map of
the... But the geography, again, doesn't make sense, because we're much less than 5 miles from the stone quarry at this point.
I think so.
It has to
they
be.
Said they're halfway back to Alexandria.
But I'm saying like the people on car and motorcycle have been, although they are going at kind of a shambling pace, they're still ahead of them. No, maybe they're not.
But they're also heading away from Alexandria, right? So like,
yes.
I don't know. This geography is really tough to decipher.
It's just hard to believe.
Because they don't ever tell us what the actual exact plan is.
Well, here's the other
thing. They just mention, oh, the green balloons, the pink balloons, the blue balloons.
Right. Here's the thing. Glenn shows up and says, hey, there's no cars in this town. And they pan out to show, indeed, every car's got its like hood propped up as if someone's gone and scavenged through here.
Yeah.
But we also know the Alexandrians have only been here once and they never went back.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, that's my whole argument. That doesn't make sense. Who else is looting this town? That's within
the wolves.
A stone's full. But the wolves just found out about Alexander. They followed Rick's group a bunch of miles to get there.
Hmm.
Like it doesn't make sense. All the work they did with the sand trap, the Sarlacc pit full of walkers, and explaining how the walkers is like unraveled in a single episode because they're too lazy to get out a map and I guess plot this action out. Or if they had communicated us in any kind of useful way.
That's what I want to say happened. Like, I feel like there had to be a thing where we're like, okay. I'm confused, guys. I'm sitting in the writer's room. I'm confused, guys.
Uh-huh.
The green marker is where, and they had to whiteboard this thing out, right?
Maybe.
Like, okay, give me the green marker. give it to me. Thank you. Write it up on the board. Give me the blue marker. Here's where the blue marker is. And they had to have a map of some kind because they use specific roads, and you can see that they actually do have a printed map of this location when they're planning this thing in the first place. Like, I feel like that was planned out. They're just not communicating it to us very well because they never said where the green marker is supposed to be, where the blue marker is supposed to be.
Yeah, so I got up super early today because I couldn't sleep, and I decided to listen to other Walking Dead podcasts that I've already released, and one of them was Project Fandoms.
Did they get it any more than we did?
No, in fact, one guy said something really smart. I can't remember which of Nina's hosts said it, but he said, you know, I think it's interesting that in Game of Thrones that spans continents and regions that I never feel or rarely feel like I don't know where people are.
Huh.
Or even in a large-scale battle like Blackwater, when people are scrambling this wall and down this stuff, it's like, I feel like I know where all this action is. And, like, how The Walking Dead can't keep track of people within a two-square-mile radius is kind of amazing.
You know, I did have trouble with Game of Thrones. And I don't know what his background is with Game of Thrones. Sure. Maybe he's read the books and reviewed the maps. And
My geography sessions, Westerosi geography sessions with you was in the back of my mind.
Yes, because you had to explain all of that to me. Sure. I was like, okay, where's the Iron Throne? Where is the Iron Bank? Where is the Iron Swastika?
But I think,
like, where is all this shit?
To be fair, I think a lot of that stemmed from you having to jump in, like, on season 4.
Sure.
Without, like, you know,
because I don't care when I'm not podcasting.
Sure. Well,
I for the most part,
that. But I'm saying that, like, it's different. We've
I don't absolutely have to know.
Like, no one can tell me I wasn't a Breaking Bad fan until I started podcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was amazing to go back and see those first three seasons where we weren't podcasting to see how much more detail you get. Surprise, surprise! When you watch something two or three times and read a shit ton of articles on the internet and have 100 people emailing stuff to you, you know, it's a different experience and engagement. But if you're that kind of a engaged viewer, and I am, like, I've gone through obsessive detail and tried to figure this out, and I can't. I will say that I think the 45-minute time thing seemed to track fine okay, like, which I think they maybe did storyboard all this. They just didn't communicate it very well.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, that's the other thing. So this, I already talked about the cars being looted. They find Sturgis getting eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting eaten by the zombies. And I had this random note in my notes. How ticklish is it being stage eaten by a zombie? Because, you know,
having,
like,
fingers and teeth gnawing, yeah, like, you know, frying at you.
Yeah, and they're, like, got their face in your armpits going nom, nom, nom. And it's all fake. And, like, how many times have people just, like, because once you get that ticklish feeling, forget about it. It's like,
you got to put prosthetics on them.
A person,
right?
Yeah, like, you need, like, wear a chest shield or something just so you know you're not going to get tickled. But, so, yeah.
They, third time I can imagine, just like, we made up this actor, like, we spent 4 hours in a makeup chair this morning, and he just can't stop laughing.
Yeah.
And get him out of here. Get
and his zombies could fuck with him by going, oh, nom, 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 saying a bunch of funny shit.
Like Cookie Monstering him or something.
And it's also funny on a meta level, because I guess cracking up on camera is known as corpsing.
Corpsing?
Yeah, I don't know why, but
I've never heard that term.
But yeah, when you crack up on camera and you break character, it's called corpsing.
Because kill the scene? I don't know.
Bet that's what it is. You killed the scene. But it's super funny in the Walking Dead context. Like, I want now I want to see a bunch of B-roll or cut footage of extras giggling when they're getting eaten by zombies.
Yeah.
They go from stage screaming to genuine laughter. Uh-huh. I would watch 15 minutes
of that.
It's
a thin line, too.
Oh, yeah.
Between screaming
it's like
and laughing.
Love and hate.
Yeah.
So the crew decides to hole up in a pet store, and Heath is still being his weirdly passive-aggressive self to Michonne, who says, look, dude, I'm trying. And he's like, yeah, for now. She's like, all right, well, I'm stopped trying. Here, go outside the pet store. Me and Glenn are going to sprint to Alexandria. You fuckers try to keep up. Are you daring them to? I don't get it. I don't get it. Your only hope
Heath,
if...
Heath heard it. So Heath heard it before, right? Yeah. And he's... But now got that rolling around in his head, and he's skeptical that these people have actually decided to help them. Like, he's waiting for them to flee.
So the solution
at any
is
moment.
To antagonize them by calling them the worst person, you know, essentially implying they're the worst person that you think they are.
I know. I'm not sure, like, that's the best call for Heath at this moment, but he's seething. Like, he's seething inside knowing these people are going to abandon them at the first point of failure, and, like, I can see where maybe that might make him lash out a little bit.
I don't know.
I thought that part worked fairly well.
Really?
With Heath overhearing this conversation, them not really knowing that he did, and like him being annoyed by that the whole time.
I just feel like super that normally when people you barely know come up and say, you know, you're acting like a douchebag. Like if your best friend says, look, man, you're kind of being an asshole. You pause and take stop and think. But if like someone off the street's like, hey, that doesn't know your situation, is like, hey, man, stop being an asshole. It's like, well, I wasn't being an asshole, but I'm kind of interested in being one to you right now. And that's when I don't have a pack of screaming zombies after me. Like, anyway, I do love the pet store and how they dressed it up. Like, they actually put small dog skeletons curled up in the balls at the bottom. It's with wow, terrier puppies and big bold. It's like, that's some demented shit, man.
It is. It paints a picture of people just saying, fuck the pet store. Shit's going to hell. Getting out of here. Yeah, but you wouldn't go around unlocking every parakeet cage in the store.
Not unless you're pet detective.
Like scooping out all the guppies into a transportable bowl. No,
you'd run. But like, yeah. I like how, I don't know, maybe the writer's just juvenile, because like, I think that's a funny detail to sweat.
Oh, yeah.
But what about the pets? Oh, they'd be dead bodies. Okay, let's make a bunch of gruesome pet skeletons and have a bunch of, make sure people know they're terrier puppies. They're baby dogs, and have people like, wow, that's fucked up when you think about it.
Sure.
And there'll be at least one podcaster just sitting there watching on a Tuesday morning being like, wow, that's really fucked up.
The other thing I noticed is when they're standing around in the street talking.
Yeah.
And these guys have their guns drawn.
Uh-huh.
Gun shake is real, man. These guys are standing around, like, shaking the guns in their hands. Like, every once in a while, when they go to speak their line, they'll shake the gun. And
really?
Watch for it. It'll destroy your viewing experience, but watch for it. Both Heath and Dickless are doing it in that scene.
I guess that's fine, because
it's just a tick. It's like an acting tick that it seems like most of these people have.
Yeah, but it's like, any show that deals this with gunplay should have someone advising them and teaching them basic.
Oh, I don't think it's a safety problem. I think it's just funny to watch the actors.
It kind of is when you just shake, yeah.
But they all have their fingers off the trigger. All doing the safety thing with just your finger on the side of the gun.
Right.
So they know what they're doing, but they don't realize they're shaking the gun, I'm certain.
Well, I mean, yeah. But it's like, it's funny because like in season two, during the classic Ricktator speech, you had Sheriff Rick Grimes gesturing with his gun at his own family members, like just sweeping the barrel over. It's like, come on, man.
Uh-huh.
I don't care how crazy he is. He's not going to do that. So Glenn decides that we need to buy Rick more time and also buy Alexander more time by setting fire to a building.
So that was the key to it, right? Buying Rick more time.
Yes.
Like, I was starting to call bullshit on this whole thing before I realized that's what he was doing.
Yeah. And Nicholas agrees to take point because he's the one that's got any experience at all being in this town. And he does have a good suggestion, which is to go after the feed store. Because, you know, I'm thinking, sure, you can burn a feed store down to the ground. Like, you might get a grain silo explosion. It's like, there's all kinds of things in the mix.
I thought how that turns out is super clever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, okay, so your best candidate for burning already burned.
Let's head to the garage.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, first target, let's go to a garage. I remember a stack full of empty gas cans and oily rags and hay bales. Oh, fuck, it's burnt. Let's go to the feed. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. Makes total sense, and it was smart.
And Glenn, before they go, has to do one thing. And I thought he was making like a Maggie shrine.
He's just pulling everything out of his pockets,
he's pulling everything
out
of his bag. One of it is the keys to Maggie's vagina, of course.
The pocket watch
that Herschel threw to him back in season two.
His compass, I think.
His compass, and then he finds the CB, and he radios Rick what they let him know what he's trying to do. Yeah. Which Rick is Jason Bourne style, running through packs of zombies, slicing him, dicing him, cutting his finger, which weirdly kind of hamstrings him. But man, the guy can run. He can run.
He's
Tom Cruise levels of running in this episode. Pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, So I don't think the Alexandrians could have kept up with him.
Oh, God, no.
For one. He can't really have Glenn go with him because that removes 50% of the badass from the other group. Because then it just leaves Michonne as the only badass protecting these people.
You know what, though? That might have been interesting. If Rick, if you want to go full on that, then have Rick and Glenn and Michonne say, we're splitting up and we're going to deal with this threat. All you guys got to do is get back to town. you know where it's at, run in that direction. And just
leave them
to
their own devices.
It would be a lot less annoying to see a group of native Alexandrians, because then, like, okay, Heath and this not Tobin guy could distinguish themselves against the useless backdrop of the others, and then they have a real moral dilemma. And maybe Heath's character arc is he understands what Rick meant because he actually had to live it. Like, it'd been like, what if Heath starts from the very beginning, hey man, you're just gonna leave us, and Rick's like, you know what, that's what you think, there's Alexandria, me and Michonne and Glenn got shit to do, run. And then
I mean, that would kind of prove his point, though, right?
But watch Heath come to the conclusion that, like, he's trying to save them all, but you just can't. How are you going to save a guy like Sturgis? He's an idiot.
Yeah.
That might have been interesting, but they didn't go in that direction. Instead, they got Glenn and Michonne doing kind of an extremely half-assed patching job on this wounded guy's leg. It's a single roll of gauze over his bullet hole.
Yeah.
That's going to hold you till the infirmary guy.
Sure. It is smart of Glenn to empty his pockets, because, like...
Sure.
He's going on a dangerous mission. They could probably use this stuff. And we see throughout this episode what we presume they've been doing all along is when somebody dies or they kill a walker or something, they search pockets,
that
they
was
pull
cool
everything
too.
Out.
Even Rick, when he was going through, and he was looting en route.
Yeah, doing some, I don't know, micro-looting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Then both the wounded guy and Annie, who's the broken ankle girl, volunteer to get left behind, which kind of legitimately blows Heath's mind. He's like, wait a second.
It blew my mind, too.
Well, I don't know why. Like,
because I've got a sprained ankle. I'm not going to volunteer to die. She literally has a sprained ankle and is ready to just give up and die.
Especially since they just established that they were having no trouble staying. The only reason they stopped... was not because they were progressively gaining on the walkers. The reason they stopped was because this guy was bleeding out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So broken ankle, sprained. Broken is too severe. Sprained ankle girl.
Yeah.
Is not going to give up and die just because she has a sprained ankle.
Yeah, I guess. But they were, I mean, this was a direct retort to Heath. Like, you know, Heath sitting there like, what the fuck? These guys are on board with Rick's leave me plan, you know. Maybe that was the point. They were doing extra early because they're being selfless. And he's like, this does not compute. Well, I didn't know you could not be a selfish, entitled twat.
So it's the 1-2 punch of that and Michonne's speech to him that finally get it across.
Yeah.
I guess.
And he's like, no, man, that's not how we do. We have each other's back like always, except for when, you know, Dickless and what's his face decide to betray us all. But whatever. He doesn't know about
We've come to expect that from
him. Even Nicholas told him, like, at this point, he's buying a fiction that's already been refuted by the people that authored the fiction themselves. Like, no, that's not what happened. We cut and run. The brave people stayed, died.
Yeah.
Which is yet another thing, like, ding, ding, ding. Like, sometimes you have to cut and run. It's a smart thing to do. It's not about being brave, but coming from an avowed coward, it's even a stronger point.
Well, I bet they both feel differently about it. I mean, Nicholas being the one who perpetrated it probably feels like shit.
Sure.
I mean, we know he does at the end of this episode, certainly.
So at this point, Michonne calls Heath out and is like, I'm tired of this bullshit. I'm doing everything I can for you people. And it's the old, you haven't been out there versus I'm a naive idiot argument. And it's a pretty nice scene for Michonne.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But it just... as a result, makes Heath look stupid.
I just hope this is the last time. Like, she shut it down. All the Alexandrians who are left know what's up. Let's just get past it, people.
You know, we need, like...
You're shaking your head like it's not going
to
be.
I'm just saying, like, as we do this podcast, I start to get a feel for, like, deja vu of things we've said.
Yeah.
And I feel like we need in the background, like, you know, when you go to an industrial place and it says there's been so many days without an accident. Mm-hmm. Every single time we say, hopefully this will be the last time, we should take that off and say it's been zero episodes since we've bemoaned the plot devices on The Walking Dead. I wonder what the record would be. Because I know we've said, I hope this is for the last time, at least 3 times this season. And this has been a good open for a season by any standards. So Nicholas, as he's leading Glenn to the feed shop, wants to re-kill one of his buddies who's reanimated from the botched run. And he does so. And at this time, they start hearing gunshots from Alexandria, which manages to kick the urgency up a notch. And I'm like, really? You weren't already maximum hustle with a 10,000 strong herd on your tails. This is, you know, It's kind of like the football players always say. It's like when the people are like, hey, is, you know, there's bad blood in this team. Is there any extra motivation? It's like, I don't know, winning whatever game we're trying. If you're not motivated to get up and play, it's like someone's hurting your fees is going to give you that extra motivation. Like, I don't know. I'm in full hate. I'm full hate podcast mode. So.
Oh, I can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. The Pet Shop Boys decide to get on the move, but it's already too late because now they're kind of surrounded. Kind of, except for again,
kind of barely, yeah.
We know that the herd is coming. This is the forefront of the herd. It's only going to get thicker and worse from here. And Ms. Michonne says, we can't chance it. And they decide to wait until the zombies move off.
I took one look at both directions of that street outside the pet shop.
Yes.
And said, you could go either direction, frankly. There's nothing stopping you.
But the thing is,
I've seen them kill more zombies in this episode single-handedly than were in that street total.
And again, if I give him credit for paying attention to the time, which I kind of am, Michonne said that we're about 30 minutes ahead of the zombies, and we're 30 minutes later in the episode, and she's saying, we can't chance it. Let's wait them out, see if they move off. That's not going to happen, man.
Yeah.
It's like trying to wait out a fucking dust storm when it's like, if you're going to wait it out, you're going to wait the whole thing out.
Yeah.
And there's no way you're going to be able to wait out a zombie herd in this little shitty pet stop. I don't think.
Probably not.
Pet shop.
I don't know if they have dog food, but.
So Rick makes it to the RV, and I thought the walker pile of bodies by the wall that we saw them bashing their heads into was a pretty nice touch. There's some still kind of squirming and whatnot.
Sure. It's cool.
Back in the pet shop, Not Tobin makes a death note for his wife, a dear Alice or Annie letter.
Mm-hmm.
And Michonne writes back on her arm, because they're trying to be quiet, of course, you're getting home.
Yeah.
Which should have told Not Tobin he's definitely fucked. But now, shit, there's zombies in the pet shop somehow. They've been chilling out while people have been bandaged and having conversations and shouting and stage whispering, but now they just decide to stir.
Yeah, I don't.
This is.
Is it because the walkers are headed that direction and they hear the walkers, like the herd?
I don't know. Because
I'm trying. I'm reaching, man.
I know,
looking
man.
For some explanation.
I'm just saying that these, whatever, man.
Potentially they hear the herd.
Sure.
I'll say that. I'll give them that one.
And then the zombies on the street hear the very slight commotion, and now they can't wait them out anymore because the herd is here, just like I said like 5 seconds ago.
Got to move.
So everybody bails out, and Annie falls down. Again, this plan would have been far more successful 5 minutes ago.
Where was her help? Where was her crutch to lean on?
Well,
they had one before. Now they're just leaving her to her own devices.
Well, they did lose.
It was Glenn. It was Glenn who was helping.
No, so I was going to say they lost three Dickless. People.
So they had Michonne.
No, four people.
They had Michonne and they had David. And both of them could have carried someone.
Wait a second. Michonne and David had a shot in the leg prop between the two of them.
Yeah, why didn't David carry shot in the leg and Michonne carry... Because
he's a big, heavy dude, and he needed more help. I don't know.
Wimpy ankles, and there they go.
Good questions all.
I mean, he's only shot in one leg. Come the fuck on.
Well, she only has one.
What happened to your other leg?
She only has one sprained ankle. I mean,
I know.
She never heard of hopping. But anyway, she falls down and demands that they leave her there, and then empties her pistol futilely.
Uh-huh. Throw it to one of them.
Or
blow your brains out.
Save
whatever.
One shot to blow your brains out. Or the other thing is, like, there is a chronic lack of mercy killing. I'm way more upset at the fact that you're going to leave me die screaming than you might potentially leave me to save the greater good because I can't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, god damn, it's cold. So Nick and Glenn arrive at the feed store, but guess what? It's already been burnt down by an act of God. That God, he's always trolling folks.
He loves to, yeah.
Lightning and firestorms and fishnados, zombie-nados. He's got the trolling turned up to 10 on The Walking Dead. The town is apparently like a goddamn maze, because Michonne is going down some back alley off the main street, and have run against a chain link fence, which everyone managed to scramble over except for Michonne and Not Tobin. Which, come on, Not Tobin, the guy with the shot gimpy leg is making it up there. You can't haul your giant ass up.
Mm-hmm.
Tobin doesn't make it. Michonne does. And again, no one's heard of the concept of mercy killing. They literally just stare at Not Tobin getting torn apart on the other side of this chain link fence for a long time. No bullet to the head, no samurai sword to the head, no nothing.
I gotta say that the two dudes at the front muscled over that fence pretty fast. Even shot leg guy Scott.
Yeah.
Like, they, good job on them.
Yeah.
And then I don't know why, but Michonne just kind of hangs around waiting to get her ankles pulled on a little.
And again, the zombies have no interest in biting through clothes when they've got these juicy hams, two pairs of them just kind of flaunting their face. They're all about pulling down and getting to the good part.
Yeah.
So, his wife gets trampled as he's getting killed. And again, thanks for the mercy killing, Michonne.
I totally believe that you couldn't bite through somebody's boots or jeans, though.
And Michonne's wearing, like, zombies
wouldn't know that, so yeah. They'd probably still be trying to bite through them, but I would totally buy
it. But not Tobin was wearing, like, khakis.
Yeah. I bet they could probably get through that.
Yeah. Again, I'm skeptical that these guys' teeth can bite through any layer of clothing.
Yeah, well.
That's a long-standing complaint between me and The Walking Dead. Nicholas and Glenn meet a similar fate at the end of yet another dead-end alley in this fucking one-horse town. Mm-hmm. They've got zombies on all sides of their fence, and Nick gets this all dreamy, I took a shell too close for comfort on the beaches of Normandy, kind of look in his eye, and Glenn screams at him enough to bring him out of this deep well of disassociation, and he comes too long enough to say thank you, blows his brains out, which was an effective scene because they showed it from Glenn's point of view, or I guess it's actually, they're showing it from Dickless's point of view, but he gets covered in a mist of blood. That was actually pretty cool. And then somehow he gets tangled up in the body and falls into the herd, and we watch Glenn apparently screaming as he's being ripped apart and his guts are being torn out of his body, and it just cranes up to show us how hopeless his situation is, to let us know that it's no possible way he can be rescued in this circumstance.
There's so much here to talk about.
Let's do it, because this,
I mean, a lot of it I probably, like, a lot of it I'm including in feedback, so I'm not gonna talk about is he dead or isn't he and why not. I want to talk more about, like, themes and that kind of stuff with, especially as it relates to Dickless. First of all, if I go into this and I watch and I'm saying, okay, Glenn's dead 100%, Glenn just got torn to pieces and eaten alive, this becomes a much more effective scene for me. Like, I'm looking at Dickless and I'm going, oh my God, okay. So Glenn, so this is essentially a repeat. Dickless has, he took Will and whatever crew he was with before, cut and run, got them all killed. Mm-hmm. This time he's leading a mission with Glenn and he fucks up and he gets Glenn and himself killed.
He cuts and runs on life. And manages to get Glenn killed, yes.
And gets Glenn killed, and, like, that's kind of tragic because Glenn was trying to save this person. Sure. He was trying to show him how to survive.
Yep.
Show him that he could be better than he was, and not, and that he hadn't killed him when he should have.
No, it's a very dark, nihilist take on post-apocalypse morality, but it's kind of interesting.
Totally. I think so. And it's also interesting to just kill a main character with not much fanfare.
You get a little bit of Bear McCreary, you know, sad music coming out of commercial break, but it's just matter of fact.
But all of that relies on the fact, on a clear death for Glenn.
Yes.
All of that relies on him absolutely being dead at the end of the scene.
Not making it back.
And I probably would have thought that if it weren't for, you know, doing what I got to do as a podcaster, going out and researching, getting emails, like, all of this stuff has made me say almost definitively, no, he's not dead.
Same here, because mostly what the showrunners themselves have done after the fact. Like, I get the Talking Dead is kind of a bad idea, and we've bemoaned it before. Like, you know, the fact that they think they can clear up plot points and plot holes and
just by, like, I don't want official people involved in the thing.
But to get in there and talk about Glenn's death and, like, hey, you know, it might not be over, and it's just really poor form. And I don't understand why you would undercut. Like, if you're wanting to troll your audience and fake him out, then fucking fake him out and be like, is Glenn dead? What do you think?
Honestly, I wouldn't.
What does it look like on screen?
Like, I wouldn't show you something that appears that definitive and then say, maybe he isn't, maybe he is.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's not the same thing as leaving a cliffhanger of how he's going to get out of it.
Yeah, and the more they talk about it, the more certain I kind of became, the more angry I got about the way they're handling this. Like, and again, a lot of this comes down to Talking Dead, the existence of the show, undercuts its narrative, and this time it undercut it in a big way, and then they couldn't leave well enough alone because they kept talking about it. To me, it's like, you throw a grenade, I think it's poor form to throw a grenade like this to the audience.
So it's a huge event, right? Like that's but that's if you a do problem. It,
just let it detonate, man.
Yeah.
Like, don't go back and try to do a bunch of double talk and
just say no
it.
Comment.
Yeah.
No comment. Yeah. I'm George R. Martin-ing it. I'm not going to say
sure.
a damn thing about what happens.
Yeah. Or Sorry. Lie. Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
Rick's going to fly in on a squirrel suit.
Or just say no definitively. Like, if you're trolling the audience already, yeah. you are lying to us with the pictures you're putting on the television if yes. Glenn's not dead.
Yes.
So just keep lying.
And that's what
just
I don't
keep
like.
Keep lying.
I don't like to feel that I'm being lied to. Like,
yeah,
that's the thing about, you know, your Usual Suspects yep. problem versus The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
That's the thing that Breaking Bad never did to me. Like,
yes.
Like I said earlier, all these shows that I'm thinking of, they never lied to me. They showed me clear motivations and things that actually are happening. And now they might leave it like a little early mm-hmm. and say, will they be able to get out of this scenario? And if so, how? But they never say he didn't get out of this scenario and then say, well, no, he did.
Well, it's like
come back next two episodes from now and say, no,
that's
he
the
got out.
In the cliffhanger. Like, you know, Picard yeah. getting abducted by the Borg. Perfect example of a great cliffhanger because it's at the end of the season.
Yeah.
There was actually, I think, if I remember correctly, I was sweating bullets because there was like Patrick Stewart's contract was up that year.
Yeah.
And they hadn't announced whether he was renewed or not. So it's like, this could be an interesting way to write him out of the series with the big bad Borgifying him and Riker establishing Riker as a badass captain if he's able to defeat the Borg anyway. And then they go on without Patrick Stewart. That's genuinely gripping if you're a Star Trek fan circa 1989. It'd be so fundamentally different if, like, the Borg disintegrated Picard in front of me.
And then they said, oh, that was actually a transporter ray or yeah. something that they were doing. Or if they had shown 15 Borgs surrounding him with their claws out,
yeah.
ready to even then, Borgify him, and then they come back next time,
and he
got out of it. Data swung in at the last moment and karate
yeah.
kicked him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of shit I don't like.
Yeah, I mean, they're all cliffhangers of a kind, but one has you going down the Batman, the series, where it's like, whatever situation you're in, they're going to yeah. get out and easily and like in the yeah. first frames, the next episode, except for we're going to have to wait at least one.
The other has you questioning how they're going to get out of it,
and it just,
like, which I think is a more interesting thing.
It makes me disassociate, like, Nick, next time someone dies on this thing, I'm going to be like, okay, did I actually see them die? Because yeah. this has happened with Carol. This has happened with Glenn like twice now. This has happened to so many characters where they've done this will they, won't they. Tyrese.
Yeah.
You know, gets converged on another horde of walkers armed with nothing but a hammer, and they're all around him, and then he just kind of stumbles out of the woods two scenes later. You can't do that many times before people start just not falling for it and getting annoyed.
Yeah. And you see so many other people getting ripped to pieces, and I feel like that's another dishonest piece of this is
yes.
we see guts coming out of somewhere.
Again, they can say it's a straight face. Well, that's actually, you know, guts aren't in people's neck, Jim. Obviously.
Exactly. And I said that during the live watch. I was like, okay, well, that's obviously dickless getting ripped open.
Yeah.
But I still don't feel... So they never show Dickless, right? They're clearly,
like,
trying not to show him and show us Glenn instead.
Also, last season, Glenn, when Nicholas jumped him, yeah. got left for dead in an almost impossible situation. This is like the third or fourth time this has happened to
yeah,
Glenn.
Yeah.
And yeah, like if that...
Whereas like you see Noah being eaten and ripped to shreds, right?
So yeah.
That's a clear death.
If Glenn's getting this ripped up treatment and there's like a half a dozen zombies around him, then okay. And there's no fence, or maybe he gets away or someone comes in and saves him. When he has 500 zombies around him, and I'll tell you another thing.
I feel like what they're going to do is just have them rejoin the herd as it rolls through. The herd distracted him. And he climbed under the dumpster and done.
I'll tell you another thing.
Yeah.
Nicholas and Glenn race past a very noticeable fire escape in this fucking alley.
They do.
Just race right past it. And then if we missed it the first time, they do a bunch of pans over their back so we can get it and see it again.
Yeah.
Like, how can you block that shot and not think, oh, we fucked up. We're going to have to take this out digitally in post.
Yeah.
Or we're going to have to shoot around it, or we're going to have to find a different fucking alley.
They leaned pallets up against it, camouflaging it. Not very well.
And I'll tell you another thing.
But I don't buy that Glenn would miss that.
How did Michonne survive in the wild for so many months and years without being attacked by zombies? How did she do that?
Pets.
Mm-hmm. The smell of zombies. How did Glenn famously escape from a building that they're surrounded with brick?
Guts.
Michonne is sitting there in this building with two dead zombies on the fucking ground, and she's like, you know what? We need to hold our ground.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. So Michonne doesn't... Does Michonne know that trick?
Michonne...
I don't think she would know that trick.
It's the pet trick, Glenn, but she knows obviously why it works, because I think there was this discussion, because it's the scent and all that.
So yeah, like, she knows the pets worked.
I would think that she would be able to put the two... Maybe not. Maybe they've never talked about their various zombie survival strategies. I feel like that they actually had a conversation about the smell and all that, but maybe she doesn't put two and two together. I just...
But Glenn's in that building for a while.
Well, and again, Glenn races past a fire escape. And now maybe the producers of Walking Dead will be like, well, then he's stuck on a fucking building.
But that is way better than being stuck.
It's way better than getting stuck
on... You can go down the other side.
You can go down the other side. You can jump from building to building, maybe. You fight and live another day. When you get up on this trash can, it's all over.
Yeah.
And then here's... I'll tell you another thing.
Okay.
So Glenn and they make it they make it clear that instead of just jumping right up on this, Glenn and Dickless go into a desperate last-ditch fight to save their lives. They fight and shoot all their bullets, and then
every single one of their bullets.
Then they go to knife, and they take these zombies knife to knife, and they barely make it to the jumpster. With what bullet did Nicholas blow his head off with?
The magic bullet. It's complete because I don't know if they intended for him not to use all of his bullets. If he doesn't use all of his bullets, why does he pull out his knife? Also, the sound guy fucked him.
Why?
Because the sound guy puts in a couple of chicks.
Aha.
And while those sound effects are going off, you see Glenn not firing his gun. You see him with his gun pointed at the ground, not pulling the trigger. So you know that it's Nicholas who is out of bullets at the very least, and then he blows his own head off with a fucking magic bullet, like a Ready Player One teleporting bullet.
Maybe he reloaded
shit
up there. We didn't see it. Maybe he pulled out a whole lot piece. Well, why didn't he use that instead of his knife? Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't. It's just lazy and dumb.
Completely. Yeah, I'm. The more we talk about this, the more angry I'm getting about this whole ending of this episode.
And again,
I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
I think they're getting the desired effect because everybody's worked up about it, and everybody, like, there was all the reaction.
Yeah.
They're all the reaction shots. They even did the reaction shots on the Talking Dead where they were showing people the episode and they had like night vision cameras set up.
I hate that shit.
Watching dudes cry.
I don't give a fuck how someone else reacts to a scene.
Well, that might be because you're a cyborg, but it is weird to see a guy like me, big dude with beard.
It's funny if it's like an 8-year-old.
Yeah,
it's not funny when it's a grown ass man going.
I do think
when
that
Glenn dies,
the Red Wedding has ruined the internet with this, because now every single time some big moment, now fucking The Walking Dead producers.
Well, it's
do
PewDiePie
it
too. PewDiePie started this whole reaction.
Yeah,
fucking PewDiePie horror cam.
Markiplier.
Yeah, no, they.
Yeah.
I hate those things, those reaction videos.
They're getting in on, I'm like, they're so they wanted all this
actually
to happen.
It's the Ring. I think it was the Ring that started it.
Really?
Ringu. Yeah, you had a lot of little Japanese girls reacting to like watching this movie, and then they had like this girl in the well kind of come out of the TV.
Uh-huh, sure.
Adam, and they all freaked the fuck out.
And they're
and I think that like
film
was kind of the genesis of that idea. But
huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, I always think it's dumb because now it seems like a thing to do to advertise horror movies. I've seen this in like 3 or 4 different ones, is to have the night vision of people, of an audience member reacting.
In
like,
theaters, sure.
Why does that make me want to go see it?
It doesn't. It doesn't make me want to go see it.
Yeah, anyway.
It makes me roll my eyes.
So let's move on. I think we've ripped this thing apart at least as much as Nicholas did. Michonne and Heath are taking wounded guy back home, and it's a slog because they've lost everyone despite their best efforts. Michonne's rightfully worried that there's no smoke yet, because Glenn said from the beginning, if there's no smoke, that means they're probably fucked up. And Heath is trying to say, oh, maybe it's not that bad. And also, I thought it was funny that she almost superstitiously smears the ink message of hope that she wrote to Not Tobin. Like, they're talking about, you know, the smoke and what it might signify. And she's like, well, I want to write off this thing where I was talking, like, you know, you'd get home. Yeah.
I didn't even see that.
Oh, yeah. No, she rubbed that little ink message off of her arm.
I was too busy taking notes, I think.
While Heath is crossing the river, this creek, he gets to see his blood spattered face and flashback to Michonne's crazy talk about. And so you're in a situation where you got blood on your face. You don't know if it's from you, your friends,
or
a zombie.
Now you know what it's like, Heath.
Now he knows, and he realizes what a stupid ass he's been this whole episode. And I got to see his stupid ass transformation. I feel so blessed. It's good though.
If it's the last time they deal with it, I'm okay.
I flip our sign? It's been zero episodes since we said it's the last time.
If it's the last time, I think they needed to learn a hard lesson, and this is the first time they've been out of the community. I'm okay with it.
Every fucking Alexandrian has to learn this lesson. They've made it clear,
and there are none left that haven't learned the lesson. So we're good. This is the last time.
I don't know. One of them kitchen bitches might be still alive.
Oh, no. Ron's going to have to learn his lesson.
Ron's going to have... You're right. He's going to have to learn his lesson. He hasn't learned his lesson, Jim.
He hasn't. You're right.
Rick tries to raise the alarm... Or wait. Rick tries to raise anybody on CB, but it's just static. And he's like, oh, shit. Because from Rick's point of view, he could be the last man on Earth right
now. And he sees no smoke, right?
He sees no smoke. He knows what that means.
Which means they're still coming.
And then Daryl finally picks up, and Sasha immediately jumps in and tries to shame him. Like, yeah, that's right, Daryl. Daddy's coming home. He's on his way home right now. And wait till he finds out what you've done.
He's going to get the belt out.
He's going to get the belt out. So then Rick gives... He actually has a pretty insightful speech here about, you know, we got to keep going forward. We're going forward for them. And them is different from everybody there. Like, you know, for him, it's Carl and Judith. And for Abraham, it's probably Rosita. And for Sasha, it's, I don't know, her sense of community and just living.
The tower itself.
But he says, if we go back before this job is done, that's to make us feel better. It's not, you know, because again, they're trying to lead this giant herd. I thought that was really, really good. It's too bad that there's so much shit sandwich in between there. And
it works too, because Daryl turns around.
But I thought it would be more effective if that actually did convince Daryl. I don't think Daryl actually turns around until he hears gunfire in the CB, kind of muddies him caring about Alexandria versus his personal connection to Rick kind of thing, which, you know, whatever. This episode's a fucking train wreck.
Well, so, I mean, Rick's argument is... I don't know. It's a tough call because, like, he might be able to say, well, me going back and kicking some ass and dealing with whatever shit's going down in Alexandria is also for them, right? Like,
but he had arguably the most important job of keeping most of the herd, and Rick had a second most important job now of getting the herd diverted back.
Well, okay, so here, let's talk a little bit about that plan, because I think that is strange, too. So Rick doesn't want any... First of all, Rick wants redundancy in this plan, right? He sends Sasha and Abraham and Daryl.
Okay.
It's not like... And Sasha's like telling Daryl, look, if you leave us, they'll get us or whatever. Like, they could stop us. Well, that's going to happen with Daryl there anyway. I don't know. So he wants redundancy in that part. But when he goes to get the RV, he's like, no, I can do this. I can do this myself. What if he gets killed? Well, there goes fucking Alexandria. Good job, Rick.
Yeah.
Whereas if you took one other person with you, they could drive the RV. Like, you get killed.
Yeah, no.
There's still another person to go help you with your
mission. Again, making up on the seat of his pants, I think we're beyond redundancy. Like, these are all Armageddon scenarios. But yeah, I guess if he doesn't give a shit about these people going back, yeah, you're right. No,
you should take at least one other person with him. I don't care who it is.
Yeah.
Except don't take Sturgis.
I don't know. This is another one of these Angela Kang episodes. She's the one who wrote like one episode of The Terriers and then a lot of episodes of The Walking Dead.
I don't recall having a big problem with her episodes.
Nah, she's done some shitty ones back in season 3 and 4, I think. But I she's at this point, she's written like a dozen episodes. And Michael Slovis was the director.
Oh, this from Breaking Bad.
Cinematographer on Breaking Bad. So it's like, I know he knows how to frame a shot. It's stunning to think that he looked down the glass and like, hey, there's a fire escape that they're running back here in this scene I'm filming. Ah, fuck it. Maybe it was supposed to be fixed in post or editing and they just didn't do it.
I don't know.
Because like he's got a pretty good eye for film.
Yeah.
And for shots and communicating visually. I don't know, man. Yeah, Daryl decides to come back eventually because Rick gets ambushed by some wolves who have a gun courtesy of Morgan. This is the result of all the Morgalizing last week.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl hears the gunshots. Seems like he doesn't know what to do. Rick quickly gets the upper hand on the wolf pack.
This was awesome. I liked all of this stuff.
I did. And he discovers like this telltale stash of baby food in the wolves pack, which to me communicated that these guys came from Alexandria, which makes his speech about we're doing this for them more poignant, because for all he knows, Alexandria's burnt to the ground.
Yeah.
And his own house has been plundered.
Sure. And his kids have been killed and all sorts of shit.
And he epically heads off a follow-up ambush from the wolves by seeing him sneak up in the rearview mirror, and he just perforates the side of the RV where they're standing with his assault rifle, kills them all. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And this is all interspersed with Daryl riding hellbent for leather someplace on his motorcycle, and I think we're meant to believe that he's actually going back to save Rick, his best boyfriend, but it turns out he's going back.
Rejoining the mission, yeah.
Michonne and company arrive at Alexander to kind of survey the devastation. They see the truck crash against the walls, and there's stuff that's smoking, and it's pretty desolate.
Yeah, we know the situation has been handled already.
Yep. Daryl reunites with Abraham and Sasha without any kind of real explanation. So what do you think about that? What was it, the combination of Rick's speech and then him getting gunshot, which I feel until Rick gets on and says, I'm okay, then it's even more important for Daryl to get over there, because maybe someone needs to drive the RV and or be the bait with the motorcycle to head off the path. I don't know.
I think Rick's speech just worked. Like, he's like, okay, let Rick handle himself.
Then editing sucked, because the way they did it, his speech came way before Daryl's eventual change of heart, which was ambiguous until the very end. And the more I think about it, it doesn't really make sense. So we cut back to Rick, and he can't get the RV to get started again. And he's fucked because there's no Glenn or Dale to fix this fucking thing.
Yeah, they're done.
The herd catches up to him right about now, and we pan up, up, up to see the RV slowly, but not quite, being half encircled.
Yeah, I like the shot. This is the shot.
This is a cliffhanger
that you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not Glenn being stuck under a pile of zombies.
This is a terrible situation for our hero, but you can see some obvious avenues of escape, but you know he doesn't want to escape, because if he does,
He's blown the mission.
So what does he do? I'm actually involved.
How long does he sit in that RV trying to start it as they come in the door?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, close the door, first of all.
Sure.
He just left the door wide open. Sure. Come on. But yeah, I think that is a much better place to leave the episode than a swarm of zombies eating or not eating Glenn.
That's all I got to say about the episode and the recap proper.
We spent a lot of time on that. I don't know how it happened, but we have a lot of feedback.
Okay. Well, good. I like feedback.
Before we get into feedback, we've got a sponsor to talk about.
Oh, that's always nice.
Harry's.com. Harry's is a shaving site where you can go. You can either sign up for like recurring shipments where they'll send you razors each month to keep you stocked, or you can individually buy stuff there. I've been using Harry's for, I think it's about a year now.
I'd say.
It's been a while, and I've always been really impressed with the quality of their stuff. Like, I've tried other subscription services for shaving, and they have not been near the quality of Harry's. And I really like them. They've been doing this thing where they'll have a kit set up for you where you can get like the handle, you can get a bunch of blades, and you get like a shaving cream and an aftershave lotion, which smells really great.
Smells nice. Does it feel nice?
It feels really great too. Yeah. But you can go there right now and get that kit, which is normally $15, for $10 if you go there and use our offer code, which is BALDMOVE, all caps.
Yep. Got to scream it right through your keyboard.
Yeah.
BALDMOVE!
And that's harrys.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S. You know why they're so good? Their quality is so good? Because they bought a German factory to make these blades.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
They actually melted down a whole bunch of surplus World War II Panzer tanks. So you're getting like the best German steel.
They did.
I mean,
they did.
They might as well get a good use for them.
And the reason everything is so cheap is because they cut out the middleman, right? They don't have to have some factory upselling them on their blades and all that stuff. They just, they
just
cut
in
them
case
out.
Harry does listen to this, that thing about the German tanks is super lie. It's like a lying underneath Nicholas corpse screaming death kind of lie.
Yes, but the German factory and
that's legit,
and the cheap prices are not. Yeah, the inexpensive nature of Harry's, the good quality, not a lie. So if you go to harrys.com right now and use the coupon code BALDMOVE, all caps,
BALDMOVE,
you get $5 off your starter set or $5 off your order, whatever you want. Check it out.
Do it.
We start off with Aaron T. Says, I just finished the latest episode. He's going back to last episode to talk a little bit about Enid potentially being a wolf. Says, I just finished the last podcast, wanted to write in and say why. Unfortunately, I think Jim is right about Enid.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
She's a wolf. I personally hate you for this.
All right. Well, strap in, buddy. The reason is this show's tired history of forcing redemption arcs time and time and time again. Logically, Aaron, you were right. Enid should not be a member of the Wolves.
Oh, I broke the Aaron wall this right up front of the podcast. I don't know why I did it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But whatever, my secret's out.
Oh, no. I don't think it was that well kept anyway. It was like Rick's secret in this episode. Enid should not be a member of the Wolves.
Hey, man, if Superman could be Clark Kent with a pair of glasses, I can be Aaron with just a period in my name.
Okay.
That's all I need.
You're right.
It's not the same guy.
But the mediocre writers couldn't resist putting in the trope of a character who betrays a group, then feels bad about it after falling in love with a member of the group, and then wants the group to forgive them for said betrayal. So let's go through the list of people throughout the show who have betrayed the main group or made huge mistakes endangering the group and then have sought forgiveness. In no particular order, Eugene, Abraham, Fistbump, Carol, Bob maybe? I don't know. I'm sure there are
Bob
others missing.
Bob fucked him over for alcohol. Gabriel, God, Gabriel's number one with a bullet.
Yeah.
Hopefully bullet right through his head.
Then he goes, current redemption arcs are Gabriel and Dickless. Well, Dickless is done for, but this email came in before this episode.
Which... we didn't actually make that point, but this undercuts his redemption arc.
Completely, yeah.
Completely.
Well, so it was... yeah,
if Glenn survives, there is no point to his redemption arc at all. It's just a pointless thing with no payoff.
You're right.
Because Glenn was wrong. He knows it. Shame on him. He's going to survive anyway.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. It takes all the teeth out of that. He says, both of which make no sense, as they should have been either executed or banished for their acts. Kind of agree. I predict they will both either be forgiven or die during the process through a redemptive act.
You're half right.
He says, I hope myself and Jim are wrong, but clever, creative, and unpredictable storytelling is not this show's strong point.
Yeah, I see zero evidence other than a potentially dodgy edit on her dialogue, which that last episode had a couple of weird interruptions, like Jesse and Ron arguing, and this show has never been the most slickly edited thing ever. That's the only evidence that she is a wolf.
All right. Well, Jack's going to weigh in on it little bit. And it kind of more on your side here. Given her comment to Carl, that's how we were able to something. I initially thought Enid was a wolf. But then I thought, if she's a wolf, why didn't the wolves go for the guns in the armory first? Why did the wolves who were confronted by Morgan seem spooked by we have guns? Also, if Enid was a member of, oh, God, Twilight reference, Team Jacob... team, really?
He's okay. The buff, not sickly looking one.
Wolf people, like, sure, I get it. Why did she still have the keys during the invasion? When she hands them to Carl, she says, didn't want them to have them. I think that's explained by her change of heart. Like her, oh my God, I've fallen in love with Carl, we kissed in a tree, and now I don't want him to die. That sort of thing.
But she's talking like, I guess Carl, then your interpretation is he's cutting her off because he doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to know that the woman he locked lips with in a rotten tree is secretly a wolf.
No, I think he just cuts her off because he has other things to say, which is unfortunate because it's not great writing. This leads me to believe that Enid is a double agent like Richard Burton in Where Eagles Dare. I've never seen that. But, seems she is playing all sides, just surviving somehow. I kind of like that theory, you know?
Yeah.
Like if she is a wolf, she's coming to this community and now... she's just doing what she's done all along, which is just survive somehow.
Having seen this episode, it wouldn't be the worst thing to have her be a wolf, but I still think y'all are reaching.
Okay. And then he talks about the A stamp. As to the A stamp
we fucked that up.
Yeah, that Carol saw on the porch. Isn't that the stamp in episode 13, Forget, from last season? After Rick is stamped, Jesse tells him, you are officially one of us. So is that what Sam is saying to Carol? You are officially one of us.
Yeah, it's weird because I still want to make the same point that I don't... the thing I bitched about is, like, this red stamp seemed like it came out of nowhere and was ambiguous, and I didn't know. And, a lot of people are like, oh, what's the stamp he's stamping everybody's hands with?
Yeah.
Even recognizing that, I didn't immediately go to, like, oh, now you're part of Alexander, and what does that mean to Carol? So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I needed a last episode or that should have been in the previously ons at the front.
I honestly had forgotten about the meaning of that stamp. Yeah. So I'm glad that Jack wrote in and let us know.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people, at least on the forums, I feel like that was reminding us of that. Yeah, I felt like I really fell down on that. Especially, I had no excuse. I hadn't disengaged the episode. I loved the last two episodes.
All right, I'm going to give you... I'm going to give a listener a little chance to just kind of say how they felt about Glenn's death and how they enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I don't think this is a Twilight reference, but his name's Edward. Edward.
Edward C.
No, no.
From Pacific Northwest.
Definitely not. He says, fuck, I felt Glenn's death coming this episode. As soon as he started getting all heroic, I actually cried when it happened and was hoping this was a dream.
Classic Edward.
I really think this show is going for some awards this season. So Edward loved it. He loved it.
You guys need to calm down about the awards, though. It's not.
They're not going
to. It's not going to happen.
I mean, maybe they're going for them, but technical it's not, awards. I don't like, think it's going to happen.
I mean, they are pulling out of stops for the
Nicotero.
The makeup.
He's gonna win
the visual effects.
Yeah,
I can see it getting some buzz.
Oh, they got some stiff competition with Game of Thrones, man.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, almost, it's hard to think of a category where, and there's so much good television.
Like, I can see makeup getting an award, but probably not visual effects.
Because he got Hard Home.
Yeah.
Like,
that's going to be hard to beat.
Hard Home was a better executed version of the quarry scene.
And it's just
and
not, fucking
and that's
epic.
Saying nothing that I really enjoyed episode 601. But yeah, I don't know. I'd calm down on all that because you're going to be disappointed come Emmy time.
Okay. Well, time to disappoint a lot of people who like this episode. We're moving into the Glenn section of this thing. Uh-huh. Tanya says, I'm not want to say I told you so, especially when I'm so utterly heartbroken, but come on. Couldn't we have given Glenn one more episode to stop being so goddamn nice? I think Tanya is the one last time who said he needs to, like, slap a baby or something.
Yeah.
To keep from being the good guy who's going to get killed. Yeah.
The moral center of the show.
She goes on, I mean, we all know that no good deed goes unpunished, but is that really supposed to lessen the blow of the way Dickless straight up killed Glenn by even being more Dickless than we could have possibly imagined?
Sure.
It kills me.
Sure.
And the worst part is no one will know. They'll just keep looking for him and hoping he'll show up, but he won't. He won't even get the dignity of a proper burial. Glenn deserved a proper burial, damn it.
Well, the good news is we know Maggie does really well a theoretical death. Like, if you're just probably dead
right.
off somewhere, it's fine. If she knows
you're
for
right.
sure, that's when she throws, you know, she just loses her shit.
Yeah.
She throws a rod out and is like, so maybe she'll do well in the post-Glenn ambiguous future.
Aaron S. says, I hope I'm wrong, but I've watched the scene where Glenn gets killed several times this evening, and I believe they're going to pull some serious bullshit regarding Glenn's death. We never get a clear view of Glenn being torn apart, and when the camera pulls up, we only see Walker's eating around Glenn's legs, which is where Dickless' body would have been. I think they will have him either crawl under the dumpster or some ridiculous Deus Ex Machina scenario. Again, I hope I'm wrong, but I refuse to believe this show grew some balls overnight to kill the main character like that. So that's one theory, right? He's going to climb under the dumpster. Which I think they set it up so there's room for him to do that.
So that's his version of the tank. It would. So
yeah.
I did notice that. Did you hear that Glenn said, called Rick over the.
I got feedback on that.
Oh, over the CB asshole or whatever.
Dumbass. Yeah.
Dumbass. Which echoes deliberately. And
yeah.
It would be kind of cool. Because remember, Glenn has a CB.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to have him hold up under that thing and Rick surveying it. And they have maybe a decent chunk of an episode devoted to how they could save Glenn.
But. Honestly, I want to see that at the end, right? Like, I want to see Glenn shimmy under the dumpster and be stuck under there. And
yes,
go, oh my God!
I agree. No, I'm
how
not
is
taking
he
back
get
anything
out of this?
I said about the way they staged and the way they've handled this. But I'm saying that will take a significant amount of sting off of if they do kind of mine that history to turn the tides on them. I think that
and
would
I think
be kind of cool.
They did a lot of that this episode. I'm going to move.
That's
on
the
to
one
Max.
That I caught myself. I forgot to mention their notes, but yeah.
Yeah, Max from Winnipeg. I think. He's either going to point this out or something similar. Glenn isn't dead. Obviously, I know this, but I don't know this, but hear me out. Like you stated in your Instacast, it's quite possible that Nicholas fell on top of Glenn. Glenn and Nicholas killed a ton of walkers, and Glenn could have easily fell on top of them. Glenn got a protection sandwich from Nicholas' body, providing the guts the zombies were eating, and the zombies they killed masked Glenn's scent. So that's the other theory is they're gonna
rip
his guts out, and it's gonna get spill all over Glenn's face, and they're not gonna eat him because they don't know he's there.
Although
which
that would
is
make
also
him smell
the
like
callback.
A yummy human, not a disgusting zombie. Yeah.
I would think so. Like that freshly pulled guts
That'd be like if a cow tries to hide from me by slathering A1 sauce on him. Nope, sorry, cow.
Yeah, like I think somebody in an email called it, like said it would just be gravy to the zombies.
Yeah,
Not masking a sin. And I think that's probably right, but it is a callback, too, to the guts stuff from earlier, right? If
that's
they had that happen.
True, yeah.
So maybe that's another interesting mirror and callback and all that stuff. Also, he says there's more. The last shot of the RV with Rick was very similar to the last bird's eye view shot of Rick in the tank from episode 1, season 1. Rick has a radio. So does Glenn, like you said. Glenn fell behind the group, obviously, as did Rick. Is it possible that Glenn will get away and help save Rick yet again?
Here, I got it. They're both stuck in the tank situation. Glenn walks Rick on through fixing the RV from underneath
there you
the
go.
Dumpster.
He just, yeah, he gets on top of the hood.
Rick fires up the RV, plows it into the alley, and saves Glenn. Done and done.
Yep.
Done
That's
and
awesome.
Done. There's still
it.
Time for reshoots, boys. Just take a long hiatus. We'll see you in February. Get it done.
Moving on to Bob. He says, hey guys, just finished listening to your instant take. I have to say that personally, I felt like the death of Glenn was the most impactful to me in the entire series so far because of the fact that it was so out of left field. I agree with
A-Ron.
These
are the people I really feel sorry for because this guy, or is it a girl?
No, it's a guy, Bob.
This person has been genuinely emotionally affected by this bullshit jerk off, if it is.
And then we're tearing it down. Sorry. Sorry to do that to you.
No, but I'm saying like he's not a fool for believing that. That's why I'm saying like I'd like to say that they are. Like they're rubes, but no. They constructed this to make you think that. So you are
Certainly.
Being deliberately practiced on, sir. And you should be outraged when you find out that all this bummed capital you spent was a fake out. I would think.
He goes on, I agree with Aaron that it felt hollow, but I think that's what made it hit so hard. It showed how cold the world of The Walking Dead can be.
Totally
tossing
agree.
A main character into death like a piece of meat.
Yep.
Or maybe it's just Glenn nostalgia since he's been around so long.
I mean, you're forgiven for both. Like, this guy's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe that was my big clue that it was a fake out, is I felt strangely unaffected.
But I feel like that really works if they make it clear that he's dead.
Sure.
But they don't make it that clear.
Because they're tricking us, and which is why I think I subconsciously just like, you know,
yeah.
I'm having a delayed reaction. I'm Maggieing him. Like, until I know for sure, I'm going to put off my grief.
Speaking of Maggie, he goes on with a fairly out of left field question of his own. Also, what do you think about the possibility of Maggie going to Tara for comfort and those two developing more of a serious relationship? Would Maggie swing that way? I've never seen anything from Maggie that tells me she's anything but straight. I don't know if she would change her mind. I'm not getting that vibe from her, but
I mean, there's
who knows?
The concept of like gay for the stay or whatnot.
Okay,
so while this Walking Dead shit's going down, you wouldn't do that. But if you're in an apocalypse where there's not a lot of eligible people and you have the strong, intense situation you're in,
prison and she didn't do it, so there you go.
That would maybe engender, but she's also slamming One Minute Man Glenn on a regular basis. So.
It's true. Yeah,
up in that tower, man.
Yep.
They're making a soup kitchen in that tower on a regular basis.
So, I don't know. The show's never said anything about that as far as Maggie goes, but
I think people just want to see girls make out on a show.
Probably.
And, you know, there's the internet.
There is, yeah. Moving
there's
on
probably
to Brad.
Even a rule 34 of it if you really want to see it.
Moving on to Brad. He says, if we've been faked out for the death of Glenn, I'm going to be super pissed. In my opinion, clues are pointing to his being alive. He wasn't on The Talking Dead, and his death wasn't mentioned in the memorial segment of the show.
But that's
another point,
and
right?
It's, I wonder if that's one of the reasons there's this ham-fisted, mumbly gump about it is because, like, oh, shit, we got The Talking Dead.
What the fuck are we going to do? We're not going to show his in memoriam.
To me, I'd get Stephen Young in there, and I would have him say, yeah, I was like, it was really hard,
yeah.
And, like, you
do
hate
an in memoriam
family.
Section.
You just have, you put him out there, and you have him tell fucking whopping big lies.
How pissed does that make everybody afterward, though?
I don't know. It's
so they're not in a good position to do this, and this is why you don't do it, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, like just commit, and
then people are gonna be so angry after.
But
the
you
fact.
Know what? The thing is, if they don't have an awesome way to wrap this up, that's commiserate with how pissed off people are going to be, then yeah. They should have never done this idea in the first place. So if they're giving themselves enough rope to hang themselves with, and they did that to themselves. So,
yeah.
Again, I would commit to the lie knowing that, oh, they're going to be super pissed, but wait until they find out what we really do. But again, I'm not, yeah, just, that's probably not
it's going to make this. Okay, let me continue reading his
But they episode, had to know, but they, here's the thing that drives me crazy, Jim, is they had to know people would feel this way.
Yes.
And that when they got faked out on someone as beloved as Glenn, a first season stalwart that we've gone through all these arcs with, and they've already kind of jerked us around a couple of times, they had to know. Mm-hmm. So they either thought it's funny in like a giggly kind of troll way, or they just didn't care.
Which it don't.
Or they door number three, the ever elusive door number three, maybe they actually have something that's going to make all this worthwhile.
Good luck. Continuing, because he's got one other thing that's relevant here. This is not it, though. On the other hand, they hinted that Maggie may be pregnant, so perhaps they could kill him, but it seems very unlikely given the tone of The Talking Dead. It's even bigger bullshit if the hints from that idiotic talk show basically brought, hey, we're an idiotic talk show, too. Basically broadcast the truth of his fake demise. Hopefully he is dead, so I don't feel the need to rage quit the show. And then his last line, Glenn calling Rick a dumbass like he did back in episode 2 as a way of pretend finalizing the relationship would also be pretty fucking stupid, right? Like, that's another troll moment. Like, oh, let's bookend all of his story here. And then what do you do when he actually dies, you fuckers?
That's what I'm saying.
What do you do then?
You've kind of robbed the experience a little bit.
Yeah. Like, this bookending shit is not going to work the next time.
No.
You've already done it. Yep. You've already shot your wad, and now you're stuck with a character who you can't kill because nobody cares.
You know, it's funny because people, like, there's two questions that kind of got in the heart of this on our 10 million download Q&A fiesta celebration burrito town.
Yeah.
Lori Grimes episode. And they said, like, you know, if you had a Chris Hardwick offer to do something official like The Talking Dead, what would you do? And I can't imagine being Chris Hardwick's like, this episode? You want to do what now? You're going to do this episode, and then you're not going to have Steven Young on, and then you're going to do it. Contractually, you have to go on there and carry that water. But, mm-hmm. you know, I will accuse Chris Hardwick of many things, but not having his finger on the pulse of fucking fandom is kind of how he's made his bones these last 10 years and more.
Yeah.
He's got to know exactly how this is going to play
he's
out.
He's tuned in. Yeah, he knows. And I don't envy him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if I was in this position, I don't know. Do you just quit? Because this is going to, this goes on you a bit too.
Sure.
You're going to get four. I don't know. I guess he can always say, I didn't know what they're going to do. I had no direct knowledge that Glenn was still alive. It's funny how we're all talking.
I'm just asking questions. Yeah, sure.
Like, I listened to two other Walking Dead podcasts this morning, and everyone is just kind of like, yeah, no, Glenn's not dead.
Yeah.
So you fucked up, man. 2 days after the thing, everybody's pretty much figured out the twist.
Yeah,
to the extent that if Glenn's really dead, I think people flip back around to being mad because the way they handled it, kind of like they've robbed the whole nihilist, cold, brutal angle from it, you know?
Yeah, and I thought about this in kind of the meta, from the meta angle too.
Sure.
Like, how do you contain something like that? Like, if you're going for a shot where he's clearly dead, and shit just gets out of hand, and people are like, no, we're spinning it this way, and we're spinning it that way, and he doesn't have to be dead, and, like, shit just snowballs out of control. How do you deal with that? Like, if you're Gimple, so, okay, Gimple was on immediately after the episode, so let's not say, like, that was him completely ignoring what he needed to do in this scenario, because he didn't know this scenario was going to exist, assuming he meant for Glenn to clearly be dead. It's like the Breaking Bad thing with Gale,
yeah,
right.
Sure. People jumped.
Internet
on a camera
fucking
move
blew up
and,
about
yeah,
that, and
yeah.
And
it was a non-issue.
Befuddled Gilligan. He had no idea why it was happening.
Yeah.
So if Gimple really didn't have the intention of making this so ambiguous, why? Like, what does he do?
I don't know.
What does the show do?
Because I don't think that's
people are decrying the show and saying this is the worst.
I always thought the Gale thing was a bunch
this.
Of hooey that like I don't under I really
me
like,
too.
That can
me
be
too.
Cleared up with another close watch of the scene.
And now we're on kind of the other side of it, right?
This like, is like no, this seems
everything's
like
everything's pointing to
if
Glenn
you
being.
Meant this to be a decisive death, you done fucked up. You violated a lot of the rules of your own damn kind of genre, honestly. You see someone being ripped up and
it's weird. It's gonna be
so as Steppenwall wrote an article this morning
Yeah.
Because his article, when he wrote it Sunday night, was like, well, Glenn's dead. And like, this is just kind of a brutal nihilistic. I got to give props to the showrunners for being willing to do it.
And I would have said that too, yeah.
And it really, you know, this feels appropriate for the universe. And he comes out today and he's like, this is a no-win situation.
Yeah.
Because if Glenn comes back from the dead, you've undercut all of that emotional weight and resonance of what and the kind of courage to do that on the television show.
People are going to feel cheated emotionally.
And if he's dead, the way they've dealt with the aftermath is going to make people feel like they've been jerked around. And, you know, you've blunted the, like, you've ruined the effect of what you were trying to accomplish. He's like, he said, I don't see any way out for the producers where they're going to make any significant portion of the fans feel rewarded and happy.
No, the creators of this show are stuck on a dumpster with the zombie audience all around them trying to pull them down and eat them.
Gimple's going to turn to Nicotero and say, thank you. And there we go.
Thank you for your beautiful effects work.
So what that would make, let's see. So that would make Darabont like Jackie, season one Jackie. It'd make Mizera like Dale, right?
I think so, yeah.
And Nicotero's Dickless, or not Nicotero, Gimple's Dickless. All right.
Yeah, and then there's no one left to steer the RV back onto the road. Gardner says,
whoever's executive producing Fear the Walking Dead can save the day. No problem. No problem.
I'm not sure about that.
Flip them the keys to the kingdom. Why not?
Yeah. Gardner says, in a world like the show takes place in, not everyone gets to tie up their life with a little ribbon. So as much as I hate to see Glenn die, I get tired of seeing each character have a big moment before they die. Thought when he put the watch in the bag, I knew he was in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should have definitely been a clue. But his other point of like, you know, we don't need to have this big extravaganza episode for each character when they die, because that's something we've also been, you know, saying is a tell the whole
time.
Sure,
yeah.
Like, oh, it's a Glenn, it's a Beth-centric episode, she's going to die, that sort of stuff.
I mean, Tobin's the perfect example of that. A guy we've never even seen before, spilling forth a bunch of life story. I mean, that's the most extreme example.
Yeah.
Let's just give this guy a backstory, so...
It's really his only episode.
Yeah, and then give him a little arc where Michonne has to smear off the ink and...
Yeah. Going on, Dan says, so, first off, Glenn's not dead. Watch that scene again. There's a particular part where you clearly see intestines being pulled out of what looks like Glenn's chest. I'm no doctor, but I know for sure that intestines aren't wrapped around your lungs. So it's quite simple. Nicholas fell on top of him, and Glenn served as nothing more than a table for the walkers and their Nicko feast.
Yeah, no, I think that's, and in fact, if you closely watch it, it very much seems like that is Dickless's body, like the clothes and all that matched what they're actually pulling it out of. So yeah. To me, it's case closed.
And I mean, Glenn screaming could honestly just be how horrified he
is. Oh, shit.
At A, the scenario, and B, intestines of Nicholas, the guy he's trying to save, have...
Plus,
you know,
even
being
if
ripped open,
even if Nicholas' body is laying perfectly on him like a chalk fucking outline,
yeah,
you still got to think that zombies are going to eat their way through, or like grab a piece of you that's hanging out, and like maybe even your face, like start eating your eyeballs or something. Like, zombies are not picky.
Yeah, I didn't like the way that Glenn. I don't know how Glenn ended up in the position he ended up in, head first toward the dumpster. Like the way he falls off.
That's impossible. But
it's
we've
not
seen
possible.
We've seen
trucks
a Chevy
fall off
work van do
land
Greg
on their
Louganis
wheels.
Three-quarter half twist, you know.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 from the East German judge kind of stuff. And what are you gonna do?
I mean, it just shows you how sloppy everything is. I don't know. Anyway, speaking of Nicholas,
maybe
I guess,
he actually over rotated, landed on his head, and then fell, you know. That's the only thing. Maybe Dickless.
So the silence in that scene is him literally just not being able to hear because
he's
going
got
in and out of consciousness.
Stage 3 concussion. Uh-huh. What's going inside his head is essentially what's going on in Nicholas's head this whole episode. Just and slow motion and pain.
Speaking of Nicholas, to continue with Dan's email here, I'm wondering if you guys felt that he'd redeemed himself in this episode. I mean, if we look at the facts.
No.
You're shaking your head already, but I want to lay out the case.
Yeah, no, I'm not being hasty at all. Let me carefully consider this.
So, point one, he helped guide everyone to safety.
Ah, yes, yes.
Point two, he knowingly put himself in danger to help Glenn find a flammable building.
Yes, of course.
Point three, he fought till the bitter end and took the hard way out by killing himself after thanking Glenn for not giving up on him. Now, I'm
never
blind.
Described the suicide as the hard way out in this context.
That's
before.
Definitely the easy way. So he goes on. Now, I'm not blind to the fact that Nicholas killed more than he saved with his idiotic antics whilst out on runs. And even those last moments of the of his life whilst looking at the walkers and then turning to Glenn, a part of me panicked, thinking he would push Glenn off the dumpster in order to cause a distraction to save his own life. But thank God he didn't. I do feel he endeared himself a lot in this episode, and I was even sad that he died. Glenn really showed there is a dick to be found on most of the dickless characters out there. All right. To end this email, I'd like to applaud both Michonne for her wonderful speech to Heath, and when he saw his reflection in that puddle at the end of the episode, he began to realize what Michonne was really talking about. I especially love the line, "Have you ever done things that made you afraid of yourself?" This is the kind of territory I believe Rick is stepping into right now. These also, he comments on, you know, these guys being against euthanasia, against killing. It's not even euthanasia at that point. It's just mercy killing.
Yeah, it's mercy killing. Yeah. Putting them out of your misery is how I describe it, which is, I guess, another way for euthanasia. That's what euthanasia is, right? Otherwise, it's just,
I guess,
murder.
So, yeah.
It's medically necessary.
I think
killing.
That's the definition of it. Yeah. I'm not certain. It's not something I think about a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he tries to make a case for dickless not being quite so dickless. But,
well, the other thing is, I actually like, because, you know, something I've come to appreciate in talking about mental illness, incidentally, over 4 or 5 years and talking to psychologists and doctors, is this, like, these psychic breaks, these dissociative episodes are not something that people consciously control. It's not like,
oh yeah,
Nicholas is just pussing out. Like, when he has these episodes, it's an involuntary reaction to stress beyond what your psyche can bear.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can just snap out.
It's like
it.
A seizure, right? You're not just going to say, I'm done having this
seizure. Yeah, it's like a kid has a seizure and he's like, well, come on, you fucking spaz, get up, run from the zombies. Like, it's...
No, it's a medical, it's a physical thing that's happening to him.
That's why I haven't been like, oh, what a fucking dick Dickless has been. That this is a medical condition he was suffering from. But it's still kind of frustrating.
I think him volunteering to show...
He's trying,
actually,
sure.
Does he volunteer?
I know that's the thing.
He doesn't.
I was about to say that they undercut that with having him kind of shitting his pants as Heath keeps putting him to the front. Well, yeah, you're the one experienced in the town. You know, you're the man.
And also, when Glenn and him go out on the mission, Glenn, like, he says, I'll draw you a map. Glenn says, no, you're coming with me.
Sure.
And he does. I mean, he steps up and he does actually try and lead this mission, but he doesn't volunteer.
Well, and also, I think the reason they got off into the weeds is because he didn't know the town as well, and he was trying to run point, and it's arguable that he...
And he panicked.
He panicked. He got details
stuck
wrong.
Behind a couple of walker walls.
Sure,
and...
sure. But no, he's kind of a pitiful... Yeah. He's honestly kind of a pitiful character.
yeah.
But there again, that's weird how they muddied him up, him and Aiden... Where these, like, douchebag assholes are kind of, like, gleeful about... I don't know. I guess that's a story to tell yourself. It's too much to unpack in one episode, but whatever.
I don't know. I felt like Nicholas' arc was not bad.
It was... No, I mean, we were just talking about how we were kind of engaged with it and how, you know, the way they kind of backwards told a story made a lot of sense. And it's interesting what Glenn's doing. I do think that they have fucked it up. Either way they go... They have either blunted the impact what they're trying to do or completely betrayed it.
Yeah, with the death or not death of Glenn.
So, I guess, are we supposed to be glad that they're now fumbling on the 1 yard line instead of, like, not making a pass
no.
of 50?
No, we shouldn't be. Michael says, it seems like a fish-nado level event that he would escape getting bitten, talking about Glenn. But for some reason, I'm okay with this. If Glenn emerges traumatized by this experience, it would be a good character development for him. He should learn from this to be tougher on people like Nicholas. Next time someone shows signs of weakness, Glenn should go into machine mode and pop a cap on him. Good evolution from our favorite Domino's delivery guy.
Yeah, I don't... It's hard to argue with that. I don't know what the show actually believes as far as what morality is supposed to be like in the zombie apocalypse. And maybe it's something you kind of just figure out as you go along. I'd still, like, the more I think about it, the more mad I am that they didn't show him, like... roll, like, hitting the ground, immediately rolling underneath a thing, and then they set up a situation exactly like Rick, and they laid all this groundwork with him being calling him a dumbass and all this stuff, callbacks, these that would have been really interesting in a way that his non-death isn't. So But then again, those weren't the guys making the show. Hell, I don't know, other than Nick, maybe Gimple's never even seen season one. Who knows? I don't know when he, didn't he join in season three? Or was he a season two guy?
Who?
Gimple.
I want to say he was a season, he definitely wasn't season two. At the earliest, he was season three.
Okay.
Because Mazzara was the one running things in two and three.
Sure.
Barry C. from the UK says, so some complete asshole fed me a spoiler just before I watched this episode, so it kind of ruined Glenn's stuff for me anyway. However, in my opinion, an underwhelming death is a good way to go. It reminds me of how John Travolta dies in Pulp Fiction. Spoiler alert. He was just essentially thug number one in the Bruce Willis story, but because we knew him as the protagonist in an Uma Thurman overdosing story, it was all the more shocking when he got shot on the toilet. That's a really cool... That's a good point.
Sure.
Because, like, especially when you have those dual storylines going, mm-hmm. like, he's kind of like a hero of the story.
In one point of view.
Seeing him early on in the movie, and then you go to another story, and he's a nobody, and he just gets killed.
Yep, and then he's a sidekick in the other.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's great. He also asks if the guys Rick killed in this episode were the wolves that Morgan let go in the previous episode. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they are now. And they made a point, especially of him almost getting killed by the gun that Morgan let go last episode. Dan from Philly. Hey guys, I guess the only word I can use to describe how I feel about this episode is perplexed. 80,000 of the undead in hot pursuit, and this group keeps stopping to have discussions. Sprained ankle or not, the threat of being consumed alive will make you forget any physical limitations you might have. I had this problem in True Detective. The other way, right? Like, if that guy can power through broken ribs, you can power through a sprained ankle.
Oh, I see what
Come
you're
on.
Saying.
Come on.
Yeah. And there's also another uncomfortable parallel to season two True Detective. They did a very memorable fake out death that left a kind of sour taste in our mouth and that never really paid off and became more than what it was. So,
but honestly, kind of seemed more reasonable in retrospect, right?
No, seriously, like, it's not nearly as big a horseshit as this is, yeah. But it still undercut that. And that's one of the reasons it was a good show, not great this year. So you take a good show. The Walking Dead, I'll grant, was a good show these first two episodes, and you pull this shit, what does it become?
He also says, if next week's show is 90 minutes of Morgan learning the ways of the Force, I'm going to be pissed. Yeah, I don't want that whole episode to be...
Strap in.
God.
Because that is probably what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, look, I get people are pissed at Morgan, but Lenny James, 90 minutes, he's never not been stellar. I'm actually very puzzled because that seemed to be the sentiment of a lot of people. Fuck this Morgan episode. Really? Just because he had a little bit of over rampant Morgalizing? Like, maybe there's a good reason for that.
I'm only fuck this Morgan episode because I want this shit to play out.
Sure.
Like,
no,
I want the herd stuff to be happening and done.
The backdrop of all this stuff and Glenn's death and it's yeah. a bit much, but
I don't want to go away for a whole episode.
Okay, that's fair. But to be like, I'm not interested at all in Morgan's backstory is shocking to me.
And sure,
agree. A lot of people are expressing that opinion, and I just, wow, that's surprising.
Yeah. Giovanni says, I watched the episode and immediately checked the ratings for it on IMDb just to get an instant glimpse of the reaction it received. I was shocked to see that it rated 9.8 out of 10 with almost 1,500 votes. That raises the question of what will piss people off enough to not watch this show?
Well, you know, I always talk about Bill Simmons because he's the anti-Aaron. He just came back with his podcast off his firing of ESPN.
Oh, God.
He hated the first two episodes of The Walking Dead.
What?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know.
Those were great episodes.
I don't know. But he's just like, oh, the black and white, and why are they trying to get too snooty? And it's like, you know, it's exactly what I said. This guy's wanting a straightforward example of reasonably good-looking people. But also, Bill Simmons is a wrestling fan.
Oh, well, you can disregard everything he says.
But there's an interesting, I saw a documentary over the weekend called Wrestling's Not Wrestling. And it really explained to me why people enjoy wrestling on the levels that they do.
It's a soap opera, right?
It is. It's kind of a masculine, ultra male soap opera with larger than life characters. But there's like, it's interesting because it never stops in the same way soap opera. So it's generational and you have these upheavals and all this stuff. And like, it's kind of operatic if you look at the history of like a single character in this documentary. In a very humorous way, takes us through the life of Triple H.
Okay.
And how he evolved and all that stuff. And it made it kind of compelling. The Walking Dead, if you're like looking at it from a wrestling point of view, it's got to be like the best fucking thing ever. Like, it's so much that, only better. So a guy like Bill Simmons, who can engage with The Wire and Breaking Bad, enjoy that, also can shift into the I think he shifted to the wrestling part of his brain. So when they come at him with multiple parallel timelines and black and white and reversed, he's like, what the fuck? What the fuck is this? I don't want Memento in my WWE.
I just want to see action and straightforward drama.
But no, go like, go to conflict. Any average episode that we hate on the Reddit, the Walking Dead subreddit, and everybody is curiously, that sub seems to love to talk about haters like their big problem, but they're not the ones getting top voted, and I don't know.
All right. Moving on, because we have a lot more shit to get
through.
Melissa says, please explain to me why Daryl left the herd and where he was going to help Rick. Then he ends up meeting back up with Sasha, and there's no concern over the fork in the road that some walkers might stray. Heading back to Alexandria, she's confused about Daryl, and I think we are similarly confused as to his exact motivations and the timeline. But I think the basics
I'm thinking
of it
that
is
road is where Rick was going to come from on the RV. That there is that he was going to loop around, and there's a road like the intercuts between.
Then that shows us that Rick fucked things up.
We already know he did. That he needed more time from Glenn. He didn't get that more time. He's already surrounded. No, I mean eventually. I don't think he. So if Daryl keeps leading the group away, then eventually Rick will get there and kind of like dovetail into it. And I don't know what the plan is after that, but
yeah, I think maybe he might have like a second pack behind him.
There supposedly is going to be another road that bisects this that he can intercept them and get him to follow. So now that there's the gunfires over in a horn, that would have worked. That's why he needed the extra time.
Because he's got to either meet up exactly when Sasha and Abraham too, because the herd's not going to stop for him to wait for them to show up, or he's got to wait until after they pass by and get behind the herd, and then he's sandwiched. I don't know how he gets out of that. That timing is going to be rough for him.
Sure. Yeah, no.
It's going to be interesting.
But I think that was what they were trying to do. He's going to try to seamlessly lead them to the end of the existing herd and get him back on track.
Tough. So she goes on, if Glenn is truly dead, because let's face it, the odds are not looking good, will Maggie even mourn his death? Look how they had her handle her sister missing. It was like she didn't give a shit.
No, missing is like, you know, your Schrodinger's boyfriend at that point.
Husband,
that's right.
Schrodinger's husband.
Yep.
Nathan says, after this episode, I want to officially make two different types of deaths for The Walking Dead. The swan song, where a character is made useful or important to the plot in the episode, or scenes before their death, in order to get some sort of emotional reaction when they finally bite the bullet. He lists T-Dog, Herschel, Beth, and Glenn as examples of that. And the other type of death, the siren's shriek, which is a bit of a mouthful. Where the characters
need to workshop that a bit. We'll get back to that.
Where the characters look good on paper, but the execution is botched enough to make people actively encourage their death in the show. Examples include Lori, Andrea, Tyrese, Lizzie, Mika, Noah. I'm looking at you, deck chair.
If only Noah had looked at the deck chair.
And then he goes through some of the characters that still seem to be alive, that are still alive, that seem to be relevant to either of these categories. First off, Carol has frequently flirted with joining the Swans, but manages to pull it back each time. The reason she is still alive is that she has been too relevant and too useful to ditch at all. Maggie and Gabriel are on the edge of being a siren by endangering the group on multiple occasions through inaction and generally refusing to acknowledge their surrounding situation. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Certainly Gabriel. Maggie had a moment in the tunnel where she was...
Did he put Eugene in that category too?
Eugene's
lovable. He's gone. Yeah. He's passed through the event horizon, has come out the other side.
Like, when he shoots the truck, I would say, yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah. He's a shrieker. But, now I'm kind of
rooting for him. He's the show's comic relief.
You need him.
Yeah.
KCT says, adding more to the evidence that Glenn isn't dead. So I know you think it's impossible for Glenn to get out of his current predicament, but buckle up because somehow Glenn lives. Gimple said, well, we kind of talked about this, but in some way we will see Glenn, some version of Glenn or parts of Glenn again.
Maybe he's either assimilated by the Borg. Maybe he'll be a zombie.
Maybe.
Maybe a Time Lord will come in and save him with the phone booth. Who knows?
Uh-huh. Either a flashback of the or the current story to help complete the story. So that's his exact words. Make of those what you will. William, is it just me, or does anyone else think that Enid or one of the wolves took Judith? We saw her on the baby monitor at the beginning of JSS, and I thought for sure Carl would look and see if she was gone when he took out the casserole, but it was cut away.
No way. There no way.
Then in thank
but
you...
But Carl fall asleep?
Then in thank you, Rick finds the baby food on one of the wolves. I think they are setting up a kidnapping in the next episode. Let me know what you guys think. Could that hint, could the baby food be a hint that Judith will be a target very soon? I kind of like this theory. It's stretching, but I kind of like it.
The problem I have with the baby food is, I guess that would be in the pantry, maybe? Because I don't think they got into Rick's house. Carl was guarding that with a fucking assault rifle. I don't think Carl fell asleep.
No, you're right.
And Carl, after everything was over, pulled out the spring cleaning casserole like nothing was amiss.
Yeah, nobody got in Rick's house.
Would The Walking Dead do this? Sure.
But clearly they had baby food, right? That's not in dispute.
No, and it's weird that I guess if there's no other babies in town that you would have the baby food kept in the pantry. But then again, if you're getting down to eating celery soup, how far is eating baby food down the line? I mean, maybe that it is something that's, and they all had dumb rules. So maybe they made Rick parcel up all of his formula and shit and they're spooning it out to him just because that's their dumb rule. I don't know.
Maybe
Lydia had to have something useful to do for herself. That was her name? The woman stuck in a pantry?
So
Lydia. I think that's, I was trying to think of Carol screaming the name and that's what came out. So.
All right, moving on. Beverly B says, so everyone I know believes Glenn survived thanks to the screening attributes of the zombie guts, which, first of all, it wasn't even zombie guts that would be flowing on him. It would just be Nicholas guts, which he thinks they would just want to eat. But if zombie guts work that well, then it raises the problem I've had from early on. Why don't they cover themselves in zombie guts all the time?
Yeah.
Got a limp? Like in this episode?
Sure.
Cover yourself in zombie guts. There's lots of them around. Limp along with the herd. Up until now, I've given it a pass, although it bugged me by telling myself that the gut shield would take a while to set up and would work imperfectly up close. I don't know. A lot of ambiguity around how it works and why it works.
Like, it's... The only downside is you smell revolting. It is curious that they wouldn't even have, like, maybe you even build big bulky suits that have guts and stuff on it that you can take on and off. Or I guess
she suggests that too. Yeah.
Ah.
I don't know, man.
Steppenwall mentioned in his reviews, like, I wonder if that's something that Gimple wishes that they could undo, or Kirkman, because Kirkman's the one that did it, wishes that they could undo, because it's like that seems like a great answer for everything.
Guts. Yeah.
You're stuck in this place. You need to get out. And there's a bunch of zombies. Guts.
They know it works. Just as long as it's not raining, it works.
As long as it's not raining.
There you go. There is your out. Have a scene. Every time you don't want them to use it, have a scene where it's
down
raining.
Rain, sure.
Yeah. Carol from Richmond, Virginia says, here's my beef with this episode, cloaking. She's going to talk about the pets, I think. Yeah, Michonne's character is introduced as a stealthy badass arriving in the midst of a zombie herd by way of two zombie companions. Why not pull a couple of zombies in the pet shop and make escorts for the group? At the very least, why not have Gimpy 1 and Gimpy 2 roll around in some zombie entrails? If they fall behind, they have last line of defense. It would have been a great way to demonstrate Michonne's experience to Heath without suffering through another speech about it. And I think, yeah, that's key, right?
Like, how fucked up would that be? Because I'm sure, I mean, like, they're just start butchering and like, okay, you're not going to believe this, but this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's going to work? Pretty sure.
Done it before.
Yeah, that would come across as savvy and clever. Yeah.
And he never would have thought of it, and he could have been, you know, thoroughly impressed by it.
Sure.
He sees it.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
I agree. Okay, Reed from Calgary says, overall, I like the episode, though I feel like I didn't really understand why certain characters were doing certain things. Maybe I just watched it too late, or maybe I missed a mumbled line, but why did Daryl suddenly take off? Where'd he go to? Where did Rick go to? What was he trying to do? Why did Glenn and Nicholas run for blocks and blocks to burn down a building? Was everything else made of solid concrete? I don't know. He's just questioning, like, what was going on. And in case we hadn't talked about it, I wanted to leave this in here, but I think we've covered it. He also says, by the way, have they actually said that Maggie is pregnant? Because she's obviously pregnant, right? I think that's what they were getting at before Glenn left last
time. It's not obvious, but that's certainly a fan theory.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I don't think it's obvious either. Andrew E. says, last season it seemed Noah wanted Glenn to watch him die, which I found to be an unreasonable request, but I guess that's the mindset of this world. We're all in this shit show together, and I'd rather have your company and die horribly and slowly than be snuffed out gratefully. Watch me die. It will make me feel better. It doesn't make any sense, but that's the mentality of these people. Also, he says, favorite line of the episode award goes to Rick for the horn stopped. Good. We didn't talk about the shitty dialogue because I think I have a couple of emails about it, but yeah, there was some just bad exposition. Like, no, we hear it. We hear the horn stopped, and maybe have a different character say good.
Yeah.
So he doesn't come across like a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, even then, like, you couldn't shoot Noah because the glass door is the only thing keeping him alive. So there's a reason for Glenn to, you know, be like, look
at
him.
And he was stuck there, right?
Yes.
Like, couldn't.
These lack of mercy killings just seem like you're, again, I keep going back to Obi-Wan Kenobi. To me, that's the worst moment in the prequel, that he left his best friend to die on a mountain. He just cut his shit completely off.
Yeah.
He's on fire and screaming, and it's not Jedi to put him out of his misery. He's not driven from the place by the Emperor coming. There's no battle droids. He just says, again, you're the asshole, Anakin. I've left you in anguish, Princess Bride style, but you're the asshole.
Yeah.
Wow. And that Michonne is essentially Obi-Wan this entire episode.
Okay, we got one more email on the meta of Glenn being dead or not.
Oh, boy.
Sleef says, this episode was an unfortunate drop after two amazing episodes. I agree. He's super disappointed in the storyline because both options, him being dead or alive, suck.
Yep.
If he's dead, it was an anticlimactic end to a long-term well-loved character. I actually think that's kind of a good thing in this universe, but I'm going to continue. He was treated like an afterthought. Although, I have to say it was interesting to see a leading character have a realistic death. You know, no 10-minute heartfelt monologues or heroic self-sacrifices, just a bad decision, a dead end, and a shitload of zombies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's...
I agree. I don't know that that's such a bad thing if he's... I think the way that they handled it, yes, if he's dead, it's a bad thing now.
I mean, we've said this like six times in the podcast. If they die, go with the nihilist, anyone can die at any time, that's actually kind of commendable.
Yeah. On the other hand, if he's alive, the writers are trolling the audience so hard, it's beyond insulting. Seriously, you're going to tell us Glenn got out of that? So Nicholas fell right on top of him, and even though Glenn's head is right there in the open, the zombies just ignore him, and he scoots under the dumpster and makes it out. Ridiculous.
He's also screaming, which is an understandable reaction, but that's not something that would make a zombie not fall on you and try to eat you either.
Screaming would attract zombies,
That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
So, like, play dead. Go with the ball boot strategy of playing dead.
Yes. Yeah. Justin says, one thing I've noticed about The Walking Dead writing over the past few episodes is a rampant use of ambiguity and doubt. Is Sasha suicidal? No, she says with a half smile. Is Enid a wolf? Probably not, but there's evidence and lack thereof either way. Is Glenn dead? Most likely, but there's just enough doubt to leave the door open that he is. Or that he's not. How do you think the use of ambiguity works on a show like this, especially since in the past the show has been quite demonstrably unambiguous to the point of beating you over the head with character motivations and death scenes? So does that undermine the times they try to go for some ambiguity?
Of course. The boy who cried
wolf.
Yeah. Because, and it's different because, you know, The Leftovers is a show we're currently digging on, and it is all about ambiguity. Everything could be taken two different ways, depending on where you purchase material. But it's interesting and kind of thrilling.
And it's consistent, too.
Yeah, but it's a different type of story, too.
Yeah.
This isn't a zombie melodrama, so I feel like that...
And the ambiguity is never, is this character dead or alive, right?
Yeah.
Like, is what you're actually seeing on the screen the thing that actually happened.
Right. So if that was one of the conceits of Walking Dead, one of the premises is that at no time it's a psychological thing, a thriller, and you got to decide what's real for yourself and what's not.
It's more like, what does this mean?
Yeah. So The Walking Dead, I don't think can get away with that. No, I think it's more much more like The Boy Who Cries Wolf, where, you know, these fans, I feel sorry for them. They spend 48 hours grieving for Glenn. And, like, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, a character, like, I stopped reading Game of Thrones. Jesus, I get this is 3 years ago, but I'll protect you people that haven't fucking got around to watching Game of Thrones yet. I stopped reading the book when I got to a certain event for 2 weeks because it just broke me. I'm like, fuck this series. I don't fuck Martin. You've taken every bit of hope away from me, and I hate you all.
If it had been a bait and switch.
Yeah. If that's been and I had done that, I would have been pissed.
Yeah.
So I feel sorry for the people that have really been bummed out these last 2-3 days. You know, assuming that we find out, and I'll be ultra bummed if it turns out that yes, Glenn is dead, because we've been spilling so much hot air about it. Which I guess is what they want. God damn those people.
I think so. Okay. So Mike kind of lays out a case for why this would be good if he were actually dead. He says, look, Glenn didn't get a long, drawn-out, and transparent episode devoted to his death, and I thought that was awesome. Not everyone gets to go out as a hero. Glenn's death is a tragic, gruesome statement about the way shit happens in this world. Glenn just ran out of luck, tried to help / trust the wrong person one too many times, and it sucks, but that doesn't mean it wasn't impactful. And he kind of, he was surprised at our response to this in the instant cast, and I think, you know, we hadn't thought about it. He says the dramatic implications around the fact that people don't even know what happened to him is so sad. I know Jim is an emotionless robot, but you too, Aaron. Come on.
Well, but I didn't. I think you got it that I was skeptical that he was dead from the jump. I really just didn't buy it. But yeah, once I thought about it, I think that would have been a cool way to go.
He also says, I think you can also appreciate what's going on thematically in this episode. David's story, who's the guy we kept calling Tobin in the first one.
Not Tobin.
About Betsy. Dude, that's Glenn's story. The parallelism is fantastic.
Is it Glenn's story?
He met a girl after the... Yeah.
But Glenn was never one of the lost, damned savages.
No, he wasn't. I'm gonna let him say his piece here.
It
tells the story of Glenn without saying it's about Glenn. How they show Nicholas breaking throughout this episode is also really good. Then when Glenn finally accepts Nicholas by letting him show him the way, this is the final straw, man. He's trying to lay out a case for why this episode was better than we gave it credit for. And I don't disagree that some of these themes might have been good. Just the way that they're undercut at the end.
I think this is the rare case where the episode is worse than we were letting on an instant cast.
Maybe so. Austin Jack says, fist bump is pregnant in real life, and in episode 2 was clearly showing. How will they write this into the show? Will Fistbump be asked who the father is, and Eugene will step forward and say, I engage Fistbump in sexual relations in an attempt to create a type of harmony between us, and as a result of this encounter, a child was conceived, and this child will grow and will be a bringer of the cure. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to handle that. I mean, they'll hide it. They'll hide it as best they can and hope that nobody cares.
That occasionally happens on Walking Dead or on TV shows.
It happened with Sasha last season. I think they can do it.
And a gun.
I mean, she was clearly pregnant in the last episode. I noticed it while watching it, but I don't care.
No, I think it happened to Anna Gunn, season 4 Walking Dead, or Breaking Bad. She had a baby, gained some weight. You have one. It's like same thing with Chandler and Friends. Like dude had a hardcore pain addiction habit, and he was super skinny, kind of dangerously skinny Chandler. And the next year you got fat Chandler, and then the year after that you got normal Chandler. People have real lives. They don't have to work it in to the show.
Sure. Jackie says, most of the discussion about this week's episode seems to be arguing whether or not Glenn is dead. There's one more thing no one else seems to be talking about, so I thought I'd pass it on. Glenn appears to die in much the same situation, and from the same camera angle that we saw Rick trapped in, which I guess is narrative symmetry of some sort. But of course, Rick didn't actually die in that tank. Meanwhile, there's this exchange between Rick and Glenn from season 1, episode 2, Guts, where they first met face to face. Rick says, back at the tank, why'd you stick your neck out for me? Glenn says, call it foolish, naive hope that if I'm ever that far up shit creek, somebody might do the same for me. Guess I'm an even bigger dumbass than you. Many seasons later, Glenn is indeed up a similar shit creek, pinned down while the walkers occupy themselves while pulling guts out of his trusty companion. Rick had the horse. Glenn has Nicholas. About the same. Except you can't ride Nicholas out of a bad situation.
Watch him. Watch him.
Maybe someone will do the same as he did for Rick and stick their neck out for him.
No,
interesting bit of dialogue. I do like that.
Like I said, the one absolute answer that Gimple and Nicotero have for snarky assholes like us is to be cackling to themselves as they're seeing all this reaction and didn't do something epic and mind-blowing. They fucked it up by going up there and talking about it, but they could. There is a place I could kind of squint and see something kind of epic. It might be unbelievable. You might not believe that Glenn was able to get underneath the whatever, but I can see conceptually some awesome things coming out of here, grudgingly. So,
okay.
And I'm ready. Like, honestly, if they do something cool with the tie into that tank scene, I'll be the first one to be like, yep, they got me.
All right. I want to talk about a slightly different angle on this. Ed says, "False hope defeated is a beat often played on The Walking Dead. I think we'll see Glenn play out in a way somewhat familiar to how Sophia did in season 2. Speculation, a search, some hope, and ultimately a corpse. Mm-hmm. Zombie Glenn is a certainty." So he's definitely on Zombie Glenn's dead. Do you think that'd be interesting? Like, they're kind of setting us up for everyone thinking that Glenn is dead, right? No smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Rick's going to think it. Michonne's going to think it. The people who matter are going to go back and say Glenn died.
Yeah, especially when he never shows up. Well, yeah. Presumably. But he's got the CB. That's the thing. They'll know.
Like, you're right.
If Glenn's alive.
Yeah, Rick would.
But if he's dead, then man, they were really going to town on him. I would imagine you'd see Glenn's head on a skeleton as a zombie.
Maybe, yeah. Devin from Alexander, Virginia. Good God, the dialogue in the first part of the episode was terrible. It wasn't a problem with the delivery. Their acting was well done. It was just so expositional that it felt forced and out of character. Scenes that come to mind are when random Alexandrian lady mentions that they can run and walkers can only walk. When Rick matter-of-factly points out that the horn stopped and how that's a good thing. When shoulder-bitten guy mentions he has a wife. And when Nicholas picks up the hat of dead Alexandrian dude from the road.
Or the whole, like, Michonne checking his wound, how does it look, about what you'd think. Like,
yeah.
He got bit on the neck, man. It doesn't matter. Oh, it looks great. It looks great.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Go heal up, no problem. You're going to scab up. It's already stopped bleeding.
Yeah.
Plus it undercuts the whole thing of, like, I know what this means. Next episode, can you look at my boot? Come on, get the fuck out of here. Not Tobin.
JK has another point of bullshit that we didn't mention. When Michonne and group were in the abandoned town, they heard gunshots coming from Alexandria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then why didn't they hear all the gunfire of Nicholas and Glenn only a block or so away? That's a fair point. That is a fair point.
It's true, because they were popping off like crazy in there.
They were. So the smoke shouldn't be the only indication that they ran into some trouble, or true. The lack of smoke, rather.
True.
Bill from Houston wants to know if we're going to gray out Glenn on our cover art. I don't know. I got to wait.
You know, it's funny because it's been a long time since
I
that
had
to
remove.
Flip a color. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Glenn, Rick, and Carl are the only ones left ungrayed.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, I think you probably should. Will you?
Probably.
I don't know. But yeah. Should you? Probably.
Final email. Dan B. Had a quick point about Glenn's death from last episode. I say death because if he somehow survived that, I'm calling bullshit of all bullshits on that. Anyway, a recurring theme throughout the episode is that sometimes you have to leave people behind. Yes, that is obvious. Rick tells Michonne that they'll have to leave some Alexandrians behind. Michonne has a whisper fight with Heath, telling him that sometimes you don't have a choice and you have to leave. And I liked how Glenn's
death... The whisper fight was kind of entertaining.
I
forgot to mention that, but it was them hissing back and forth is like, you know, brother and sister fighting in church or something. Stop touching me.
So he liked how Glenn's death wasn't right at the end of the episode, and there was still quite a bit of action after that. I thought that it made us as the viewers have to do just that and keep on moving. We didn't have time to mourn good guy Glenn too much because there was still a fair amount of show left, and Daryl was going AWOL and Rick was in trouble. I was curious what you guys thought of this.
It just makes me mad because I'm thinking of, like, how much better this show could be if they deliberately did things like that, killed Glenn and then like have Michonne, you know, scream to somebody, we've got to keep moving. Or
I do like it. Like, that's an interesting thing structurally, though. We're going to continue to bombard you with stuff, so you don't have time to really mourn Glenn so much.
Right. And
keep
like,
going.
Anytime you can feel a little bit of what it feels like to be in a universe, I think is something that you should encourage. Whereas this show is the opposite. It encourages you to actively kind of sit back and have some kind of, you know, you're either enjoying on a wrestler level, so you don't really care about the characters, or you're engaging it in like a hate watch, kind of like, oh, fuck, you know, fuck these people, make fun of it. It could have been better.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's all the emails we have. I think we're going to do a short spoiler section after the fact, after the music. So, you know, if you want to stick around for that, you can. We got some contact info, some stuff we can
Watching Dead at baldmove.com if you want to send us email. And also forums.baldmove.com if you want to join in. There's like 135 comments in the first 24 hours on this thing. That's a new...
Oh, so like half the email?
Right? No,
we got so much email, man.
That's the thing. Like, you're probably getting about half of a Game of Thrones. Like, you gotta bulk up. You know, it's like, I saw you...
I'm glad I can't do Game of Thrones email.
you're editing live on the air. That's like the sec. You're like now moving to brown belt.
Yeah, phase two.
Yeah, yeah. You can just like mentally, oh, I've been talking about this way too long. Cut.
Yeah.
Those are the bloodless cuts. You don't even
black
feel
belt
those.
Is when you don't repeat. You're able to discern what you've already talked about on
and
the fly.
And mentally just know I can skip through that. Yeah.
That but requires an attention to the emails that I don't quite have yet.
So my big thing with email is I hate cutting anyone. Like, if you took the trouble to write
too.
Me, it stings like a tear in my asshole to just skip over your well-reasoned thing that someone beat you to by a half hour.
I'm feeling it.
So I always throw in a bunch of stuff because I, for whatever reason, when I'm out of time and I'm just frantically skipping stuff, those are like Alexandrian deaths.
Yeah,
people that I'm
actually
cutting, like, or I'm actually weighing their email like a lamb and like whether it gets into my notes or not, that's like a Glenn death. Mm-hmm. If I'm like, oh shit, zombies are after me, I'm up against a time limit, you're dead. You're a mook. So I always tend to have like twice as much email as I can actually read just to get around.
Oh, wow.
My squeamishness of cutting people.
Yeah. See, I'm not good enough yet to know that I'll be able to not read it on the air.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, well.
Yeah, well.
I'm glad you're the one suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. Game of Thrones will be back on eventually and you'll be screwed. All right. Thanks to everybody who sent in emails. I'm sorry if I had to cut you. We're going to do a little spoiler section. So stick around after the music. If not, until next time, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.
And we're back with the spoiler section. I've got a few emails to talk about. This Glenn death from a little more spoilery respect.
Sure. Yep.
A lot of pictures going around. Louis B says he originally thought, oh my God, Glenn can't die, but he did die. But then, so I'm not sure where this pic came from, but if you remember from the comics, Aaron, the Jesus character appears a bit later and isn't in the show yet. And he sends a picture of Jesus standing next to Glenn and Rick and Daryl, like all of these guys together.
Because Daryl's not in the comics. Probably Abraham.
I think Abraham. No. He sends a set photo.
Oh.
A photo from the filming of the show where Jesus and Glenn and I think Daryl are standing next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that somehow he's got to be on camera.
See,
I was
dying to point this out, but I couldn't talk about it. I still can't do it because this is spoilers for not the other show I want to talk about. Jesus. Man, I really want to make a comparison to contemporary situations that I can't. Son of a bitch.
Mm.
Because that also cuts it out that they've got leaked photos of Jesus and Glenn hanging out. I'm sure Glenn's in costume. He's not like in street clothes, right?
No, he's in costume.
So now, because I even mentioned, I think before I left Sunday night, I said the only thing that I could see them doing is like introducing the Jesus character because he's kind of like this. I mean, I can't. Michonne is probably the other iconic character entrance that was kind of like, oh, wow, this is kind of it expands what we thought we could see in The Walking Dead when she shows up with her pets, you mm-hmm. know, and her samurai sword. Jesus is kind of that next level thing. Hmm. I don't think they quite ever nailed with Abraham, because Abraham was another kind of like, God, this guy's like right out of Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos stepping onto the comic book page. But yeah, I thought like maybe Jesus could come in there, and but man, that's Jesus is not actually the Messiah. He's not the Christ. He doesn't have magic Jesus powers. He's just a man. He's a very uh-huh. talented hand-to-hand combat, kind of like Mark, you know, what we've seen of Morgan, only more so.
Okay.
I don't know how he gets Glenn out of there. Plus, that would wreck, now that I've seen it a bunch of times, and I've heard, you know, I caught the dumbass over to CB, but the whole Glenn saying, maybe when this happens to me, someone will, that kind of wrecks the symmetry with him and Glenn. I guess someone does not mean that Glenn himself has to repay the favor, but it feels like that they've set up with all that to having.
Yeah, have Rick help him out.
But
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Jesus can. I just don't know what Jesus would do. Turn water into wine.
Really? Are you asking yourself, what would Jesus do?
He just raises him from the dead, Lazarus style. Then my faithful servant, come. And then he just gets up.
Jake from Tallahassee has a question about it. He sends in the same spoiler picture with Glenn not being dead. He says, if true, how will Bald Move deal with the fake out? I don't think you guys will rage quit one of your biggest shows, but what's the appropriate response for something like that? The Walking Dead is such a machine that nothing fans do really matters. Next week's episode will likely do insane numbers, and AMC/The Walking Dead, sacrificing narrative integrity was totally worth it. I don't know. I mean, that's a good question, right? Like,
well,
what is there anything that can be done that can piss people off so much will stop watching the show and the numbers required to really put a dent in it?
Yeah, no, it can happen. Like, it, and you don't ever
is
see
this
it.
One of those things?
You I never see imagine. It happen until it does, you know?
Sure. Sure.
Like people right now, I'm a big football fan, but people are actively saying, like, when does all these drip drops of scandals and NFL being greedy and not caring about player safety, when does that actually start to penetrate the American psyche? And I feel like it's already starting. And now we got a Will Smith movie that's going to blow the lid off of it. And
that's the thing.
The way announcers talk about big hits nowadays has changed and kind of cast a pall. Hmm. So, yes, even something as popular as American football in the United States, which is hard to understate how fucking popular it is.
Yeah.
It can fall off the throne if they don't watch it. So I don't know what
thing,
it
right?
would.
It's not like a bomb just drops on the show one episode and everybody goes, fuck this, I'm out. No, it's a snowball.
It's a drip drop. Yeah. And like, to me, asking if I'd not do The Walking Dead, I mean, if they put in a
but every
Fear
time
the Walking
they have
Dead
a,
season.
Every time they have a great episode, it takes a flamethrower to that snowball, right? And like pairs it down a little bit and says,
yes,
okay,
sure,
we're back on track. And then that snowball has to get rolling again. And
I would say, because that's the thing, I've never, if they have an 8-episode season stretch where it's just really dire and I feel like they're phoning it in and they're having characters, important characters that I care about, like Rick and Michonne and Carl acting in bizarre, crazy ways. Yeah, I mean, definitely they can fuck it up that bad. It just, that's one of the frustrating things on the show. They always do just enough execution and just enough genuinely fun moments that I enjoy watching for those, and I can still kind of maintain an affectionate hate watch for the rest.
Yep.
Eventually that will no longer be the case. I mean, I've quit better shows. I've quit a lot better shows. I quit The X-Files. But like around season 6, I quit Lost season 2. Like, I will quit a show. I quit The Americans.
Yeah.
So it can happen. I just don't know what it would be, take for some. And it's weird.
Sure.
You got the people like Bill Simmons who, I mean, maybe that's one of the reasons they're such a huge. They appeal just enough to both of these different fan bases that they have like 2 shows worth of fans. They got the fans that are looking for serious drama that they give just enough breadcrumbs that they keep watching. They got the fans of...
Man, if you want that, go to Breaking Bad. Like, just go rewatch Breaking Bad and be done with it.
Well, why?
Because that's like the perfect storm as far as like, we're going to give you just enough action and just enough smarts and just enough drama. Boom, there you go.
Yeah.
Perfect. Tie a ribbon on it. Mitch N. from South Carolina. It's very confusing. Talking about Glenn's death, assuming Glenn is dead... Could this mean that they shuffle Glenn's Lucille death to Daryl? I can't imagine any other character's death being meaningful enough for that treatment.
I've been repping that since.
Yeah, I think we have.
I've said that, like, that's the ultimate, like, if you want Negan, Nagin, whatever, to come in and have people instantly pop.
Yeah. Just have
you
beat
have him
Daryl
beat
to death.
Daryl to fucking death with a baseball bat. And you, yeah. Right, it's on. It yep. is fucking on. And now, I mean, and I don't know, man. I feel like stronger than ever that maybe that's what they'll do because they've kind of shot their wad at the Glenn death. If they kill him later on the season, what the hell?
Yeah, it's going to be without teeth. Adam M. sends in another spoiler. Different. Not talking about Glenn's death. So I know I've sent like four other emails already over the last 2 weeks. That's fine. That's fine. It happens. About spoilers, but the IMDb trivia has done it yet again. Because this was just added to the list of spoilers for 616, and he sends
616.
Yeah, for next half season. The
they
end
even
of
done
this full season.
That are they?
I don't know. But here's what's written on IMDb according to him on the trivia for that episode. Rumored to be the first appearance of appearance of the beloved comic book villain Negan. There was a casting call for this episode for a character with the exact description of Negan named Orin. O-R-I-N?
Huh.
And then a small Negan cameo will be shown in this episode. Another comment, Negan will be making his first on-screen appearance. And then at the end of it, Morgan Jones dies in this episode.
Morgan getting beat to death with a baseball bat would be interesting. Bringing him back is... I could see me caring and giving a shit about that, too. You can't beat the heat for Daryl, but that's an expensive round of ammunition to fire.
Yeah.
There's only one Daryl, and there's still people repping the Daryl Dies We Riot t-shirts at every con I've ever been to. So
that's another pretty good option, is if they can do some cool stuff with Morgan over this next season, then have him killed by Negan. I like that. So the email that we moved into the spoiler section here is the final one. Reed from Calgary. He says, I hope that Rick survives. I hope he gets out of the RV before the swarm came. I do like the hand injury. I wonder if that will turn into something. In the comics, Rick lost his hand a long time ago, and I was wondering if they'd ever go down that road. I know Kirkman says he regretted doing that in the comics, but it might be interesting to see Rambo Rick suddenly crippled. Then he couldn't do it all by himself, and maybe he'd have to start to teach, train, and mentor the survivors. Could be good for his character. What do you think? Is this going to be Farmer Rick all over again? Do we want to see that?
The only thing I can say against that is that's Kirkman says it's his biggest regret. Now, I can see him getting his writer hat on and being like, oh, how can I do this in a way that's going to be, you know, I've learned from my mistakes and it's remix time. So, yeah, I can see him cutting his arm off. And
would it be good for the character of Rick?
Like, I don't understand. Turning him into honestly, I mentor. I don't know why he said that's his biggest regret, that maybe it put so many constraints on it. Because Rick's has never not been a man of action.
Yeah.
He's just in there with his stump swinging away and shooting guns and slicing. And, you know, it didn't really slow him down much. So I don't
maybe
know
it
if
just
it's
rode
good.
Him into a corner that he didn't feel comfortable in.
Well, maybe that's a good thing for Kirkman to be in a little box of his own making. Because I've not been too impressed with his, you know, remix stuff. But is it good for the character? I don't know. And the evidence for is that they were weirdly emphasizing his hand injury.
They were, and I felt like it was such a minor thing that, like, why focus on it so much?
It didn't interfere with him driving the RV.
Is it gonna... That to me says it's going to be a big deal later on.
Maybe they'd have to amputate it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, and it'd be a pain in the ass for Andrew Lincoln because now he's got to wear a green sock on his hand and they got to digitally edit the stuff shit out all the time.
I mean, it's clear to me that he cut his hand, not that he got bit. Because I don't know why. I mean, maybe if his hand gets like gangrene or something, don't they have medicine?
That's what I'm saying.
They have antibiotics.
That's what I said.
Denise,
if she cannot, like, it seemed like they have a well-stocked infirmary.
Yeah.
So,
but if it's a bite, maybe he'd need to take it off, but.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like a bite to me.
Maybe he's allergic to penicillin and that's all they got. That's my fate. And like, I'm allergic to penicillin. So
Jesus, don't get an infection.
No,
they have other antibiotics.
But I wonder if they're as commonly stocked or as easy to come by. I would imagine not.
Nope.
Let's stock a bunch of the less effective version of penicillin just for the people that are too allergic.
Nope. Let's not. That's the end of the episode.
All right.
Thanks everybody for listening. See you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.